Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular 222, Halo 2 Farewell Multiplayer Tales, August 5th, 2010, I am Dust Storm.
I'm Brent Gamer.
Oh my god!
Yeah! And you can you can thank our intro song to us singing for the past hour, randomly.
Yeah.
Yeah, fun conversation, that was just every possible time.
Yeah, really. We'll probably put a little bonus on the end, like I did for 220.
Yeah.
So when we had Keith on, we had about a 45-minute discussion about another childhood memories. So
yeah, good. Well,
see what happens after the podcast. Yes, Greg is not here with us this week. He says he's busy doing other things. He did not specify in his text to me, so he's not here this week. But instead, we have old host Fumo Jive. How's it going, Fumo?
Hey, it's doing pretty good, man. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. Surviving school.
Yeah.
Trying to stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
That's good.
Good. Good.
It's good. You know what they say in Missouri? They say, oh, I'm fair to Midland.
What?
Oh, I've never heard that.
I'm from Southern California, so my wife's from on the Ozark Mountains in Missouri, and it's kind of she's got a hillbilly culture out there, and that's what they say. They're like, how you doing? All fair to Midland. It's like, what?
Okay.
Never.
It means average for all of us.
But yes.
Hillbillies.
Or yeah. Loosely translated, doing okay.
Yeah.
A-okay.
Is that on Google Translate? Yeah, hillbilly.
It should be. Just switch to hillbilly and it'll bring it right up.
Or pirate, yep. For that matter.
All right.
Golly. I remember one of my old roommates had a Facebook plugin, or I guess one of the languages is pirate, that you can change your language to.
Yeah.
That's messed up.
That's pretty awesome.
I think that's really weird.
Yeah, you should try. It's pretty funny. You just put your language in the preferences, and like all of the interface elements change their language. It's pretty awesome. Very cool.
Oh.
So what's up with Brent?
Nothing much. Haven't been doing a whole lot. I guess I've been playing Pokemon on DS. Still, the past week, I've put in like 130 hours into it. If it was a full-time job, yeah, I'd be great. I'd already be promoted.
I remember you said something about last podcast.
I know.
Were you,
so I've caught about 155 by now. I've caught all of the legendaries I can catch.
Wow.
So I'm over that hump. Actually, the legendaries are the easier part of the Pokedex to catch because you know exactly where they're going to be. I mean, there's a set place for each legendary Pokemon, except for the roaming Pokemon.
That was interesting for like Pokemon Silver, Gold, and Crystal were the three legendary dogs were running around everywhere.
Yeah, the roaming Pokemon. But you can still, like, the only thing you have to do with roaming Pokemon is basically just every time you change your route or you go into a city, they change position on the map. So you just have to be between a route that you know that they're going to be at or that they appear at, and you basically just have to keep switching routes until they show up at the one that you're at. The one that
you like,
currently
you like sit right at the border between the city and the route.
Yeah, no joke. You do that, and you just keep going back and forth and back and forth until they show up. And then you go and catch them. The hard part about the roaming Pokemon is the fact that they flee almost instantly. Every roaming Pokemon that I caught in this game fleed on the first turn unless you used Mean Look, which is a move that Ghost Pokemon and some other Pokemon know. And as soon as you use Mean Look, they won't be able to... won't be able to flee unless the Pokemon that you're using gets knocked out or you switch your Pokemon out. So it made it a little bit easier. I got a Haunter that knew Mean Look to learn Hypnosis, so I would knock the roaming Pokemon, their health down a little bit, put them to sleep, and just keep throwing Ultra Balls and Dusk Balls at them until they got caught. It's pretty good.
Do you have like a Pokemon spreadsheet?
No, but I do use Bulbapedia. I almost have Bulbapedia up at all times nowadays, just so I can check information on Pokemon locations.
There's one other site that I found that was really... Psypokes, that's what it's called.
Yeah, so Bulbapedia is a little bit slow, and I think it's because now that Gold and Silver are out, there are a whole bunch of people that have the same idea that I do. We're just going to pull up Bulbapedia and have it up all the time so that we know where these Pokemon are. But
yeah, I was actually thinking about this the other day, and I'm thinking about, like, possibly making an application where you have like a database, you'll have to like download updates and stuff, but it'll have all the maps, all the Pokemon, all that kind of stuff. It'd probably be probably hefty. I don't know, maybe 300 megs, maybe.
Yeah.
That sound about right, Greg? All right. Golly, I'm still doing that.
Call me Greg all day, Dustin. What's up?
I don't know.
Do you miss somebody, Dustin? Is that what it is?
Come back to me, Greg.
I've called him Greg three times today. I don't know why I'm calling him Greg. I have no clue.
It's because you secretly wish I was Greg. Is that what it is?
No. Co-host and Greg, is that?
But yeah, that would be cool. Like a standalone application that just has like all available data on Pokemon that we need.
Well, I'm planning on doing it over the summer.
It'd be kind of tough. There's a lot of data out there. There's a lot of information on effort values.
I'd start with red, yellow, and blue and see how compact I can get that, and then go to the other stuff. Because, I mean, I can't really dedicate 24 hours a day to it, so...
Yeah, the issue, though, is that a lot changes between the Pokemon games.
Yeah.
Like, I was looking it up, like, Pokemon stats and learnable moves and TMs all change between the games. Like, moves that Pokemon you would catch in red, blue, and yellow, the moves that they would learn by leveling up are completely different than the moves that they learn now leveling up in Generation 4. So, I mean, it's almost like if you went to do that, you would have outdated information. Because as you would keep going up through the generations, adding onto your database, it would just have to be constantly changed.
But, I mean, there's still... So that wouldn't be too hard to get, like, a month after the game. That'd be only one revision, what, every 2 years?
Yeah, but I'm saying right now, if you would essentially have to revise it four times.
No, I just update it, because I'd keep track of every edition. Like, you would get to choose which...
Okay, so I'm trying to figure out, you said that you would start at red, blue, and yellow on the database.
Yeah, but...
Are you saying information from red, blue, and yellow?
Yeah, I would make the application where it would cover all versions at the same time, and you basically, like, choose...
Oh, but you mean, like, you would have information where you could choose... I see what you're saying. I was thinking of a database that just has information on current Pokemon statuses, but you're saying information on all the games.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're going to do that, then yeah, you would have to make four different versions. You'd have to have information about each Pokemon from the version they were in. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'd obviously be easiest to start at the first gen games and then work up.
Yeah. And that'd just be a concept of if I can even get the first generation, then I know I could get the rest done.
Yeah.
And I probably wouldn't do, like, special events or something like that. I'd just keep it basic, like, maps... Pokemon moves and that kind of stuff. I wouldn't do like event
invite foo
or something like that.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see
the reason I would like it
how much
is,
I get done on it, and if like how many people would actually download it and support it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of information out there. I mean, concerning Pokemon, it'd be quite a feat if you could have it in a standalone application, and I would love it because then I wouldn't have to, you know, have to deal with Bulbapedia's servers. So, I'd have information instantly.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
Are there any Pokemon in Halo 2?
Yeah. I think I saw a Girafarig in Metropolis.
I saw a Ditto.
Sweet.
Yeah, we should probably move on to stuff that actually relates to Halo. I would love to start a Pokemon podcast if you want to do it, but that needs to be its own standalone show. No joke.
Oh,
no joke.
Man, we should,
if you want to start one.
Yeah, we should try it later.
I pick you, Master Chief.
he jumps out the Pokemon.
Yep. Open the Pokeball, Master Chief jumps out. He's like,
I pick you, Yap.
Oh my god.
Okay. But enough derailing from Pokemon. we are talking about Halo 2 multiplayer for this week.
Yeah.
And
the best part of Halo 2.
Yes. Brent and I got to play a little bit yesterday. We didn't do it.
We did. We won most of our matches except for the one that we lagged out on.
We did?
We didn't lag out, but there was a ton of lag.
Yeah, there was a ton of lag in the last, like...
There was a massive amount of lag in that last game, and I don't consider games where I'm lagging that much to be legit.
Mm.
Like, I mean, it was to the... If you played Halo 2, you remember back to the days when games were so laggy that you would shoot somebody, and you use, like a full clip from your SMG, and you know that it's hitting them, but they don't die, and then they die, like, 10 seconds later. It was that kind of lag.
Oh, yeah. And you're walking up the stairway, team, and then you warp to the bottom, and you're walking up, and you warp to the bottom, and you're just not getting anywhere at all.
To contribute,
so we won all of our legitimate matches. So, we did a good job.
Nice.
To contribute to the Pokemon mayhem, I didn't know Pokemon had birthdays.
We're back on Pokemon again? I thought we left this. I thought we were derailed.
I was closing my additional tabs, and I saw on one of the pages Pokemon's birthdays. Apparently, it's Charmander's and Pikachu's birthday.
How can they have birthdays?
That, I don't know.
I think that they can have birthdays if they're individual Pokemon that have like a qualifier. Like Ash's Pikachu, yeah, that thing can have a birthday. But you can't say that all Pikachus have the same birthday. It's impossible.
Does Master Chief have a birthday?
I think. He obviously has to. I mean, he was born. So, I think.
Or was he?
Or was he?
Or was he?
Bum, bum, bum.
Ta-da!
That's the answer only Oni knows. It's a question only Oni knows the answer to. So.
Home protects Oni property and Oni employees.
You did it wrong, Dustin. Said it in the wrong order.
You do it.
I can't do it. Ah. I told you, Dustin. These things have to be spontaneous. I can't.
Wait, and
just
that wasn't
voice,
just
like,
it
whenever I want.
And mine wasn't spontaneous.
That was pretty.
Yours was spontaneous, but it was also incorrect.
Okay.
Oh, you got to be correct.
That's the issue.
Like Pokemon spreadsheet.
Yeah, man.
We got more Pokemon! Ah!
Nobody likes an incorrect Pokemon spreadsheet. Like, come on.
Now,
speaking of Pokemon, no.
Welcome back to the official Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver podcast. I'm your host, Brent Gamer, with Dustin Pettigrew and Mike Funk, also known as Fumojive in the Halo community. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good. I have my Microsoft Excel open right now, so I'm able to... to this podcast in a numerical fashion.
So, have you been able to raise the EV values of your Charmander up to the level that you wanted them to be?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I've been working on these algorithms lately that have been able to enhance my systems so that I could more fully apply damage in a retrospective way, and, you know, it's time-consuming, but ultimately it's very rewarding, and my life is very fulfilled in the process.
We're never going to get married, are we?
Oh, fortunately I already am, otherwise I would just myself right there.
Once you're married, it's fine. You can be as nerdy as you want.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I mean,
pretty
to a certain extent.
It's like, too late, you made the commitment.
Yep.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, fortunately my wife isn't here right now, otherwise things might get a little rocky.
I discovered your love for Pokemon.
I'm out of here.
I can't be with you anymore. I'm taking the kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll hear from my lawyer.
So, Halo.
You can't take the kids. They have my flash drives that have my Pokemon spreadsheets on them. What are you doing?
Oh, and they have my
life. Leave the kids. But leave the flash drive.
For the love of God.
And the flash drive is shaped like a Pokeball.
You can have my car. You can have my house. You can have my kids, but you can't have my Pokemon spreadsheets. Worked too long on them. My baby.
Okay. Really, so baby. Halo 2, we're going over multiplayer.
Yeah.
So there's a few things we'll probably talk about before we get to submissions. One of the things I want to bring up first is just kind of how Halo 2 multiplayer on live kind of revolutionized the way online gaming is done now. Because, I mean, for consoles, Halo 2 is kind of the milestone in doing on live multiplayer, right? Right? Online multiplayer?
There were others that had done it first, but Halo 2's multiplayer was the first example of doing it well on a service. It was the precursor to the modern online experience that we have today on, like, Xbox 360 and PlayStation.
Before Halo 2, there was Rainbow Six 3, and JVB can go into detail on that if he were here. He used to be in a clan and used to do all kinds of stuff on that. However, that went by the kind of traditional PC server client model.
Yeah.
So you didn't really have a progression, and I think that's what Halo 2 really, you know, revolutionized, so to speak, as far as console multiplayer games, is that the multiplayer itself had an actual progression in addition to just the single player, like where you know, go from beginning to end and you have progress in between. And in multiplayer, you had a goal, you had a progression along the way. It wasn't just like join a server and see how well you do. But you had like levels that you would achieve. You had matchmaking that would set you up so that if you played right, there was no cheating involved. It was just a matter of skill, and so there was something to shoot for, and there was progress along the way. And I think that's what really made it a huge difference ultimately. I mean, the rest of the features were all, you know, different and stuff, a lot of them, but that was, I think, the one that really stood out. And you know, it's funny because back then, man, when Halo 2 came out, I mean, nowadays it's like you got games that are played more than others, right? You got Bad Company 2, you got Modern Warfare 2, but there are a ton of good multiplayer games. If you didn't have either of those two, you could still find probably 30 or 40 games that are pretty darn good games, you know, and are fun to play online. Back in the day, man, when Halo 2 was out, that was it. Everything else was just not even close, not even in the same league. So everybody played Halo 2. And, I was talking to Captain Crunk one time, and we were like, hey, I really don't think that's ever going to happen again. You know, because you got so many games developers that can live up to that standard now, that have the experience, that have the budgets and everything, to where there's always going to be, like, major competition now. So
back then, it wasn't who's on Xbox Live right now. It's who's online in Halo 2 right now. I mean,
yeah.
That was basically it. I mean, everybody played Halo 2. You looked in your list and you would see maybe one guy playing like Crimson Skies or like Ghost Recon, some of the older stuff. But Halo 2 really started, like Mike was saying, the original kind of the matchmaking style of online gameplay that is prevalent in today's online console experience, where it's not about servers, it's about being match made with random people and having a party. And one of the best things about Halo 2 is that I guess I haven't played any online multiplayer games before it on the consoles, but it seemed like it was the first to get kind of the party mentality going on, where you would start a party and then you would pull people into it. You know, you would send them all a message, and the messaging system in Halo 2 was better than I think the messaging system is in all of Xbox Live today, because you could send a party invite to all friends, which is kind of annoying, but it was still an effective way of getting a whole bunch of people in your party if you wanted to go into like big team battle. So,
you know, I think part of that is that is that back then that was not unusual. Like now, if like for instance, Gears of War 2 has that, I think. Now, if someone sends you a Gears 2 invite, you're like, "Hello, I don't have Gears 2."
I'm playing Fallout 3 right now.
They're just spamming everybody. It's cool. It's no big deal. You know, because you knew what was going on. But like now, it's you don't have all games that do that. So it's kind of I kind of wish they had those days still, because it was so easy to nowadays. Like if you want to do that, like if you have a game that doesn't support it, like via the menus, I mean, you have to go in and like send a message, right? But then you have to add friends, but then you can't sort by only the online friends. So you have to just like try to memorize people that are online and then go back to the list and like try, oh, maybe was this person online? I can't remember. And you're trying to go through, and it's just
it's like its own game. It's its own metagame. It's like,
I know. You can like write stuff down and everything and come back and
you can have your spreadsheet out and just
just like Pokemon.
I know. It's great. It's come full circle, guys.
Golly. We're not gonna escape Pokemon in this podcast, are we?
All roads lead back to Pokemon.
That's bad.
Pokemon came before Halo. Remember this.
Yes, it did.
Pokemon is like 3 years Halo's elder.
Mm-hmm.
So, respect your elders, everyone.
Pokemon paved the road for Halo 2.
Yep.
not quite.
So what do you think, Dustin? What was the what were some of the standout features that you thought were in Halo 2 that kind of set it apart at the time?
See, here's the thing. I didn't have an Xbox at the time.
What?
He didn't play Halo 2 back when it was new. He doesn't have that experience.
My parents didn't let us buy game consoles at all when I was that age. So I relied on going to a friend's house like maybe every other month when I spent the night. And we would play local, so I never got the online feel for it. So I'm kind of left out on that one. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean it was really an experience back then playing online back when everybody was playing Halo 2, when it was so easy to get a party going. Nowadays, I don't think I can get some friends off my friends list to join me for big team battle in Halo 3. But back in Halo 2, that was no big deal, man. You always had 8 people in your party. Sometimes it would be so bad that you would actually have to kick people out of your party just to go into big team battle. Like, no joke.
Yeah.
I mean, that happened pretty frequently, actually. People get mad. I mean, they wouldn't get mad, but they'd get like kind of disappointed when you kick them out, because you'd have to basically pick which friends you like best.
Yeah.
Like... Well, I don't know you. I kind of know you, so whatever, you're out. See ya.
I choose you.
Oh. Yeah, it was basically just Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
It was Pokemon.
Why?
Pokemon and Halo 2.
Why?
Right.
Why?
Pokemon truly did pave the way for Halo 2. You're right.
Why do we keep coming back to Pokemon?
Because it's a great franchise. I don't think we understand just how great of a franchise Pokemon really is. It's an awesome, awesome franchise. Good stuff.
Do you not like our Pokemon, Fumo?
Pokemon sucks ours.
You guys are all like 13, man. This is I'm way too mature.
Pokemons.
And I saw this this comic the other day that really rings true for me. It's like it has this kid that like it's going up through his life, and it shows like grade school, and everybody's playing Pokemon on their Game Boys, and they're all like, "Yay, Pokemon!" And then it shows that same guy in like high school, and he's playing Pokemon on his Game Boy Advance, and the dude's like, "Dude, are you seriously playing Pokemon?" And he's like looking all mean and stuff. And then it shows him in college, and everybody's like, "Pokemon, yay!" And it's true, man. That's how it was. In grade school, all my friends loved Pokemon. Then I played it in high school. I had to keep it a secret. It was like my deep, dark closet secret. And now that I'm in college, everybody loves it again. It's great.
Brent's coming out of the closet.
Yep. I'm out of the Pokemon closet. I had to hide in there for so long. Now I can finally be myself.
No, I think we're still in the closet. We're just inviting more people in.
You might.
I guess so.
You'll like my Pokemon closet. I got the rare Pokemon.
I got a Feraligatr in there. Pretty sweet. Got all the right EVs, personality types.
Great.
I got a Mew!
I wish I had a Mew. I need a Mew to finish off. See, right now I'm working on the Johto collection, the original 251, I think, that were introduced.
That's when
back when Gold and Silver were new. So I'm just working on that for now.
That's when you do the Mew glitch in Blue and Red and trade it up.
Yeah.
Mew glitch? That reminds me of Halo 2.
Oh, yeah, that does remind me of Halo 2. I love glitching in Halo 2. Let's talk about glitching in multiplayer.
Let's do that, shall we?
Super.
Let's talk about a game that, you know, our podcast is actually focused around. How about that?
I remember all the stories about like super bouncing.
Oh
yeah, super bouncing was pretty prevalent back in the day.
So super bouncing, in case you guys are in Dustin's situation where you didn't have an Xbox or something, super bouncing was where there was some kind of glitch in the geometry in the game where there was some kind of, I guess, gap between two different panels
textures,
geometry, where if you landed on it just in the right place, you would go flying up about 300 feet in the air, and you would still, there was no landing damage in Halo 2. So you could still land and be fine. But generally, people would do that to get into impossible-to-reach places and snipe up there and things like that, and it was really frustrating. But, you know, there was – and that continued on for quite a while. That was one of those bugs that they could not fix for some reason. It was an unfixable bug in Halo 2, and I think they had it to some extent in Halo 3, but I think that got patched. I don't know. I can't remember.
I thought they finally patched it in Halo 2.
I did see some videos in Halo 3 that still had super bouncing, but I think probably in more recent days. I mean, it's been a long time since Halo 3 came out, so I think in more recent days they've patched that and got it all set up. But but in Halo 2, no, they never did patch that. They weren't able to for some reason. I remember that was, you know, going until Halo 3 came out. But you know, since we're talking about kind of when Halo 2 started. How about we talk about ghosting? Do you guys remember that?
No. I remember something about ghosting, but refresh my memory.
I've never heard about this, I don't think.
Okay, when Halo 2 first came out, there was a few like mega bugs in multiplayer that were really frustrating. One of them was called ghosting, and that one was where you could get into a vehicle, and I think you did something like either charge a plasma pistol shot and then get out of the vehicle or something similar, like reload and get out of the vehicle at the same time or something like that to cause a glitch, where basically what happened is your character existed in two places at the same time because of a bug. So you were invisible still in the vehicle, and your character model was still back, like on the beach, for instance, at the seawall, where that one map was. And you would go in, and they would drive you all the way in. You would get to the point where all you could do was get out of the vehicle, but you couldn't move. If you moved, you would go right back instantly to where you started because of the glitch. So someone would drive you over after you did this like body split, and you were invisible completely, and you would go right to the flag. You would get out of the vehicle, and you would just hold X to grab the flag. Right when you grab the flag, you press forward on the left stick, and bam, instantly you're back right next to where the flag spot is, or to the capture spot is.
Oh, God.
So you could capture it within, like, 2 seconds of when you grab the flag. So they couldn't possibly defend it unless they knew you were doing it already.
Right.
So,
wow.
That was super frustrating. Of course, at least, you know, it became pretty prevalent, so people knew this tactic, so they knew if someone was trying to, like, jam in like super fast with the Warthog, then they knew like, oh, they're ghosting, like take out the Warthog real quick, you know, don't let him get to the flag because they're just going to take it right back. So yeah, that was something else. Of course, that one got patched like right away within the first patch.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Interesting. Twirling my mustache.
So what was the thing like the Ghost of Lockout? Was that ever kind of real, or what was that whole thing?
I don't think that was real. I know what you're talking about. I think it was probably just some, you know, somebody's friend like told somebody that was gullible about this this super, yeah. this like special glitch you could find, and then they always tried to find it and never could find it and told all their friends about it. I don't think that was real. I remember hearing that plenty of times before, though, and but really just in passing, because it would just be like, no, that doesn't exist. So, but people did super bounce on lockout to get to like certain places, or even there was a ton of like very tactical jumps that you could do, like just you could barely make the jump kind of thing. And remember, there was like a whole like clan that was that would make videos all about like these really good jumps that they can make that were almost impossible.
High Impact Halo?
Yeah, that was High Impact Halo, yeah.
It was?
I think so, yeah.
I think that they were the original glitchers, man. But they did it for fun. They weren't like, they didn't go into matchmaking and use their glitching to like beat people for no reason. I mean,
their videos are funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those guys are good at what they do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is glitching in Halo.
Yeah, but they could figure out like where, like how far exactly you could go off of the edge, because you could go just a tiny bit off of the edge before you jumped, and then you would jump, and then you would just, you know, crouch in the air and all that stuff, and then you could land in different ways. There was like some kind of, I think you jumped like right when you landed or something. I forget. There was like these special ways to land that you could get a little farther, and man, they really had it down.
Yeah.
Talking about urban legends, do you guys remember the Golden Warthog legend on Headlong?
No, I don't.
Basically, there was this urban legend that was obviously untrue, but there was so many people tried to do it where, you know the billboard on Headlong that has, like, the civilian warthog, and it's, like, yellow?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, right next to the defensive base. The urban legend went that if you shot a rocket at that billboard the right way, a golden warthog would spawn in the middle of the map. So you'd have like a bunch of people just with rockets trying to shoot the billboard, trying to get the golden warthog to spawn. It never did, obviously, but it's pretty funny.
Man.
Makes you wonder how those legends started, though. Like, what guy decided he was going to like start that legend and like propagate it over Xbox Live? I mean,
some kid tells his friend, and next thing you know, everybody believes it. And
yeah.
I don't know. Some of these, I mean, it's a little far-fetched, you know, I mean.
But that kind of goes to show how tightly knit gamers were back then, too.
True.
Well, no, it was just the fact that everybody played Halo 2. We had no choice. It was that or Crimson Skies. Like,
oh man,
we weren't tightly knit. It was more like being, you know, held in a concentration camp. We weren't that tightly knit. We were just stuck together.
I wouldn't say it was that bad, geez.
Well, I mean, it was all right. It was like a concentration camp.
That we chose to be camp, in. Hey. Wow.
I mean, look back on Halo 2. I mean, it was less like a concentration camp and more like a volunteerism project that you really didn't want to be at, but you had to be because you wanted to get into college. You had to put something on your college application form.
Okay, that's a little bit better analogy.
A little bit better. It's less offensive than the first one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But there was like mega glitching in Halo 2. There was all kinds of like crazy stuff that people did. I mean, that's the thing is like, you know, in Halo 3 you have custom maps and stuff, and there's some cool stuff in there, and there's some communities around like just creating crazy maps and doing crazy stuff with them and stuff. But in Halo 2, there seemed to be more stuff along those lines. Like there was the one where you could take a, what was the Covenant tank? Jeez.
The Wraith.
The Wraith. You could take a Wraith and like on Headlong, you could slam it right into someone as they jumped against the wall, and they go flying in the air, and it's basically like a super bounce, and you could land like on top of this crane. Like, and
yeah, I remember doing that all the time.
Yeah, that was fun, man. People used to do that.
That was great.
Yeah.
It was always funny when you got hit by the Wraith wrong and you died instantly. Like, they would ram it, like, you would ram into the wall, but you didn't jump fast enough or something.
Yep. And then
oh,
it was
man,
like,
that was great. Do you remember the glitch where I think that it used a similar concept with the Wraith where the Wraith would ram you into the wall and it would cause a gigantic version of the Spartan model to appear, like, in the sky?
Yeah, I do remember that. I saw that.
I think it was on Headlong and Burial Mounds. I didn't believe it until I saw it, but I remember doing that glitch on what was it called? Burial Mounds once, and it works.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember Burial Mounds. Dude, Halo 2 had some freaking awesome maps, I'll tell you.
Burial Mounds is awesome. I love Burial Mounds.
You're going to have to show me some of these glitches before they go away.
I don't even remember how to do them. I'm not going to... And sometimes it takes like a whole bunch of people. I remember one glitch on Burial Mounds where there was this weird combination of things you had to do to get outside of the map. Like, you had to have like a plasma pistol out, but then you had to switch to a sword, and you had to walk like 3 paces to the left. Then you had to use like a specter to get up to a certain location, at which point you had to jump on a dude's head. Then he had to crouch up and down like 4 times. It was like a certain number of times. And at which point, like, if that you like jump, and then you'll be outside of the map.
That was the thing on Halo 2, getting outside the map.
Oh,
like,
that was
people
the best.
Would spend all night like going, dude, we gotta get outside the map. It'll be so cool once we get outside the and it's kinda like, well, I mean, there's nothing really exciting out there. It's really they didn't design it to be outside the map, so once you get outside there's no textures or anything, and you're just gonna fall to your death.
I think with that it was kinda more of the destination or the journey and not the destination.
Yeah.
You know, it was more about actually doing the glitches to get out of the map rather than actually being up there and seeing, you know, the non textures and the, you know, sky wall and stuff.
Yep. Like, we did it, we got out of the map.
Oh, right. It's nothing.
But that's all right, we did it, we made it. Yes. Yeah, I remember there was I can't remember exactly how to do it on Burial Mounds, but I remember it was like it was really crazy and I think all of them had it, and I remember the one that was the remake of what was it, High Ground, I think it was called. The remake of the Halo 1 map that came out towards the
Hang'em
end.
High.
High Ground
Hang'em
was
High.
Halo
3. Hang'em
yeah,
High.
Yeah, so we had to get out of that map as well.
I love that map.
Yeah. That was a good one. That was a good one. You liked it in Halo 1 or Halo 2?
I'm liking it more in Halo 2. Halo 1 was definitely one-sided.
Hmm. Okay.
Because whoever dominated the tower that had the tunnels underneath it was always on top. Always had the lead.
Hmm.
Okay. At least in Halo 1. Halo 2, it seemed a little more balanced. Somehow. I don't know how, but it does. At least
yeah, any of you guys... go ahead.
So I was going to say just for the times I've played it.
I was about to say, do any of you guys remember sword canceling?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that was a popular glitch back in the day where essentially someone would jump on your head and you would swipe your sword at them. You'd do the instant lock-on sword swipe, but then you'd press X like right at a certain moment. It would cancel the sword attack, so it wouldn't kill them, but then they could bounce on your head again. And you'd just keep doing that until you got up to however high you wanted to be.
We
and
did.
You could get off
called
of,
butterflying.
Yeah.
There was a group of us on Halo 2 Vista. We did that on Foundation to get on top of it.
Yeah. We used to get high with sword canceling all the time back in the day.
you used to get high on
Hey, kid, want to try some cool sword canceling?
Come on, just press pull the R trigger, then press X at the right moment. It's great, dude. You can get killed sword canceling, so don't do it. It's not worth getting that high, man.
Mm. Dangerous.
This is your brain on sword canceling.
So, in case it wasn't clear, sword canceling actually makes you actually kind of float up because you keep attacking the guy, and when you swing the sword, it lunges forward. So when you're lunging forward, looking straight up, you lunge it, cancel, lunge, cancel, and it keeps going straight up. So both of you go flying, you know, way up high in the sky.
Whee!
And then you crash. Burn.
And then you want more, and you can never reach that original high.
It slowly, like, degrades after you use it.
I think I'm becoming tolerant to it.
You lose power points.
Back we're not Pokemon. Going to that. We're not going back to Pokemon, Dustin. Don't do it.
So you were talking about sword canceling, which has the X button where you cancel the sword. Now, the X button was like a big problem in Halo 2 for glitching because X button was used for sword canceling.
BXR!
Or the famous BXR.
BXR!
Double shot!
And there was BXB. There was like really complicated ones that were super long. Yeah, and double shot. Oh, who could forget double shot? That changed like double the whole game of Halo.
It literally changed the professional gaming side of Halo 2.
It's
because if you didn't know how to double shot in MLG, you would just get torn up.
The double shot is still there, though.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Or at least
So let's explain these things for the layman out there.
Yes.
Well, you're the expert. You're the one that started the Halo 2 podcast, so go for it.
All right, well, here I go. So the BXR, first of all, is where you melee and then hit the universal cancel button, which wasn't intended to be that way at all, but somehow ended up being that way. The X button canceled the animation for the melee and was able to get you right into a shot, usually from a battle rifle. So BXR meant a melee and then almost an instant battle rifle shot, which meant basically like a one-hit kill melee. So because of the combination of those two. Now, BXB was the same concept, but it was just two melees, one right after the other. Usually people did the BXR because it was more powerful, a little more reliable, because of the magnetism of the
reticle.
Of the reticle. So BXR, BXB, and the double shot, what was that, RXXR? I can't remember.
I wasn't able to do it back in the day. I still can't do it, so. Every time I would go to double shot, it'd always mess up. Like, I didn't do it fast enough or something, but it was about where you would shoot, but then you would have to cancel a reload animation, if I remember right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So it would be right, it'd be RX, then something to cancel out the reload animation.
RXXR, right?
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's, you know, there's no bumpers in on Xbox One, so you had to get the timing. The timing was absolutely impeccable. It was razor sharp. You had to get it exactly right, and it was very difficult. But I remember some guys, man, in the Podtacker clan back in the day, they could double shot like nobody's business, you know. And like Dialpex, for instance, he was just master at that. I don't know how he did it, man. He was just a robot.
They commit that stuff to like muscle memory. I bet they can do it in their sleep.
Yep.
Like they just wake up and they're like thumbs and, you know, index finger move in a certain direction.
They probably do, you know. They're probably like in the middle of the night, like 3 a.m. They're fast asleep.
Just twitching. What are you doing? I'm double shotting.
Yeah.
You're two just shots holding, elbow, like, a can two of soda shots elbow. What are you doing? I'm double shotting.
Of course, duh.
What are you doing? You could be practicing a double shot right now.
I'm playing my Pokemans.
Speaking of Pokemans, no.
Oh my god.
Okay.
Yeah, so double shot. So the BXR and all that stuff, there was a bunch of glitches that went on in that. And, you know, I remember, like, I think it was a Super Jump, too, in Headlong. We were talking about Headlong earlier. There was a couple cool ones in Headlong. I think there was a Super Jump where it was like in the building that was just to the side of the water. You could Super Jump up and then you could like walk up and keep jumping on like up between these two buildings, and you could end up on the top of these buildings like in the corner. And I mean, there was no textures there. You couldn't really do anything from there anyway, because I think what happened is you ended up behind an invisible wall. So it was just kind of like, look at me, I'm outside the buildings. But it was still kind of cool to be able to, like you said, the journey, Brent. So
yeah,
it was interesting. You know, there was another one. There was something you could do on. There was this really cool bridge that was kind of an access point. You know how you guys know how Halo games go, where there's always at least two ways to get into any one point.
Yeah.
And in Headlong, there was it was a fantastic map. I really wish there was something, you know, similar within Halo 3 or, you know, a lot of other games, but there's some kind of similar stuff in Call of Duty 4, but anyway, here and there, but Headlong was a great map, and it had like a giant, it was at least four or five stories, I think, building that was kind of under construction, that was in about on one side of the map, and on the other side, it was like a two-story building.
Yeah.
So there was two ways into the building. You could obviously go through it and go into the bottom, and then you could kind of climb around these set of, well, ramps, kind of like stairs, that went all the way around towards the top. And the second way in, well, I guess there was more than two, but the second way in was the was going around the right side and going across this bridge. Now, the bridge was kind of like not part of the original geometry. It was somehow removable, like kind of like, you know how like those cartoons right. that you see, like there's some things that are clearly part of the painted backdrop and there's some things that are clearly like animated in, like they're going to do something with this item.
Yeah.
So the bridge was kind of like that. It was somehow removable. I don't know why. But what happened is you could do a certain thing where basically you get 16 guys and they're all firing at each other or something and they're all on this bridge and everybody's like crowded like shoulder to shoulder shooting at each other. And if there's basically enough craziness going on, then it'll completely delete the bridge and everybody all of a sudden fall to the ground. It was crazy. Slow cuts weird stuff like that.
There was a lot of cool stuff you could do on Headlong. I remember one of my favorite activities is generally in the kind of the fully completed building that's right next to the waterfront, with the bridge that connects to it from the attacking base. Kind of know what I'm talking about? It's like when you're leaving in the Warthog from the attacking base, it's the first thing you see before you turn right and jump over the incomplete kind of overpass bridge thing.
Yes. Incomplete overpass.
Yeah, anyway, there's the bridge that goes into that building, and you can jump your Warthog. In Headlong, basically, they would keep vehicles out of the buildings by putting these pillars up that were too high for the vehicle to get over, no matter how long you, like, rammed into it.
Yeah.
So they were supposed to keep the vehicles out, but the bridge was made in such a way that if you took the Warthog at full speed onto that bridge, like, you would fly over the pillar and get into that building in the Warthog. So essentially you could take the Goshawk up through that building and then go over to the connecting bridge over to the you know, deconstructed building that hasn't been finished yet and, you know, just tear up. Yeah. It's just cool stuff like that.
I remember that, dude. I remember everybody used to like, that used to be a really good tactic, and that was a fair tactic. You know, you had to have the right skill to get over there. But once you got through there, you went through a hallway. And I mean, if you're going through a hallway, you could take down, you know, four or five guys, no problem with that, because you're ramming into them, you're using the Goshawk. I mean, you're just an unstoppable force going through there. And then you go across the bridge. Of course, once you get across there, you have guys above you, you have guys in different directions, so it can get kind of difficult from there. But generally, like, once you got, like, through that hallway, I remember it was just like you were just a wrecking machine going through there.
Yeah, the pillars weren't too completely effective in keeping vehicles out of buildings, but, like, kind of on a... what was it called? A coagulation. They have the pillars that are not the pillars. I don't know what I'm thinking about on coagulation, but you can get the ghost into the bases on coagulation by a. There's a thing where if you go backwards in a ghost, it will turn your ghost in such a way that your ghost will essentially the wings will go horizontal so that you can fit through tight spaces. So you can get your ghost into the base on coagulation and just wait for people to jump through that the top roof part. Like coming down to get the flag and just ram into them. You get splatters inside the base. It's awesome because they don't expect it. They don't expect a ghost to like be waiting in the base.
There was some cool stuff on coagulation. I remember one of the things I used to do, and I didn't usually get a lot of support on this because, you know, I guess probably because I was lower level and people didn't play with a lot of teamwork a lot of times. But I used to get the ghosts and take them inside the base from the back, and get both ghosts if I could. And if you, there was teleporters that went onto the top where the capture the flag part was, where the flag was actually seated. And what you could do is a lot of times people would drive a Warthog around the back of the base and go around under the bottom because they actually have kind of a garage area where you could easily drive a Warthog down there. And then they would have lifts that would go up to the middle level. And they would have guys that jump out, get onto the lift, grab the flag, jump back down where next to the lift, and then get back in the Jeep and try to run it back. Well, you could actually get a ghost up there right when the game starts, get it into the middle of the base at the flag level, and then back it over the lift, and then kind of hang it like at a 45-degree angle over the end, and then get out. So it blocked the lift, so people couldn't get up the lift. And they would actually end up getting stuck, and they can't drop down if they're getting lifted up and they're getting pushed against the ghost, so you could just shoot them. It was like a shooting gallery.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, you know, it's not a glitch, so hey, it's a valid tactic.
Yeah.
I also remember you could like put vehicles on top of teleporters. Teleporter exit.
Yep, you could block them. Yep. And then someone go to a teleporter like, "What? It's not working. What the heck?"
Was there telefragging in Halo 2?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah, there was, huh?
I'm still kind of unsure of how that actually happens.
I guess
if someone's
on the exit point, right? And then you go through the teleporter at the same time that they're on the exit point, and then they're dead.
They mainly use that to keep people from blocking the teleporters by just sitting in them. Because if they're sitting in the teleporter and then you try to go, it only works with the one-way teleporter. So say someone on the defending team is sitting on the exit portal, okay, and he's going to try and block it. You can go and stand in the entrance portal, and if you stand there for like 2 seconds, it will kill them and you'll go through. So I think they put it in the game just to keep it, you know, people from blocking the teleporters, but I guess I didn't realize that people would put like vehicles on the teleporters.
Well, so, at least with that, you can bring in a crew and you could I guess it's the same thing. It's no different from a person.
I mean, you can kill a person in Halo as easily as you can destroy a vehicle.
Then
so.
They took it out for Halo 3.
Teleporters don't really have a lot of use in Halo 3. I mean, as far as just being put into maps, I haven't seen a whole lot of teleporters in Halo 3.
They use them on the multiplayer maps, do they? You know, it's funny. It's like from Halo 2 to Halo 3, there was a lot of simplification for the sake of competitive, even advantage kind of thing.
Yeah.
And in a way, it was a step down. You know, I thought anyway.
I agree.
I don't know. I kind of enjoyed the man cannon kind of aspect because, I mean, you're actually having to travel across the map. It's not an instant, you know, I'm halfway across the map right now. I mean, if someone's on the man cannon, you can, in theory, shoot them down while they're in midair, so.
Yeah, it's good for balance-wise, but I never understood the justification for having those things there. Like, oh, we want to shoot people, you know, 150 feet in the air. That's why we put it there. It's like, wait a minute. They're going to die if they land, unless they're a Master Chief, of course. But
they are a Master Chief. They are a Spartan. That's the whole point.
Convenience. But it was placed there by the Forerunners. Maybe they knew in advance. I mean, come on. So, I don't know.
I like to think that they were used for, like, cargo movement. Like, if like, someone landed, like, they're in an airport and they just need to get their baggage halfway across the map and put on the map.
Is that like Ace Ventura, Pet Detective style, where like this one's going downtown? Boom!
Yeah.
Like obviously exactly they better have very padded packages there.
Right, double wrap.
Land from going 150 feet in the air. Yeah, I never did understand the justification for that. I mean, you know, the teleporters to some extent, but I know there was problems with it, and for balance, I know that why they did it. But you know, the justification in the kind of fictional universe, I rail on that. You know, to be fair, you know, because you know, I'm not the biggest, especially Halo 3 fan. It has its positive sides, but you know, in general, I'm kind of. I'm kind
Shot
of down.
The unbeliever.
but you know, I mean, to be fair, I talked about that long before Halo 3 came out. When they first announced the man cannons, I was like, "What? This is kind of ridiculous." You know, they're calling it, you know, something silly and everything, but like it has no justification in the fiction and everything. So I don't know.
I stand by my luggage theory. So.
Fair enough.
It seemed like Halo 2 had the big team battle maps in Halo 2 were significantly better than the big team battle maps in Halo 3.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm glad I'm not the only one who thinks so.
My favorite maps in Halo 2 were the big team battle maps like Headlong and Waterworks and Coagulation, and they were just amazing. They were great maps, and I look at Halo 3 and I'm like, do we have anything that even compares to them as far as the new maps go? And I mean, the closest thing that even feels similar to the Halo 2 big team battle maps is kind of Valhalla.
Well, and
Valhalla's
and Midship.
No, I'm talking about big team battle maps.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about.
Well, yeah.
And I mean, to be fair, that is a remake. That is an exact remake of Midship. I mean,
yeah.
I'm talking about original maps.
Avalanche from I guess it's from Halo 1, but it's decent.
Yeah.
It just doesn't have the same.
Yeah, I don't know. Halo 3 multiplayer seems really dumbed down compared to Halo 1 and Halo 2 multiplayer.
I don't think it feels dumbed down as much as it just feels like map development, like kind of the way to design the maps isn't as creative or well thought out as it was in Halo 2.
I think dumbed down is a fair word. You know what I think it is? It is more like death by committee. Like someone comes up with a great idea, and then, oh, but we have to balance it now, and we have to do this, that, and the other. And it ends up being this really, like, watered-down map, you know, that has so much potential. And the theme and the graphics behind it are really great, but the map itself is nothing spectacular. It's really pretty bland and boring.
Another bigger team, it's not necessarily a big team, but another bigger map that I think has stayed true to Halo 2 is Last Resort. That one feels just about the same as Zanzibar does.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool map. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's the same as Zanzibar, because Zanzibar had a lot more space between the seawall and the base, and there was more action that could take place, especially with the fan.
It feels really similar, though.
Yes, it feels similar, but I think it's
more so than
because of the distance between the seawall and the base, it feels more compact. It's almost like a combination. It's kind of a bad analogy, but a kind of a combination between midship and Zanzibar there, because of how close it is to that base. I mean, you could walk, you know, pretty quickly over there, either in open space or along either side. So I don't know. It's a good map, though. I do think that's one of the better maps, definitely, in Halo 3. And they obviously thought so with the beta and everything. So
the issue I have with Last Resort is just the size of the base. I don't feel like it needs to be that large. I feel like when it's that large, it gives the defending team an even larger advantage than they already have. I mean, with Zanzibar, the whole point was that the defending team had a well-fortified base. I mean, there were gates. They had they had turrets and stuff, but it was small. And if a team of like three people got in there, they could just wreck it up, you know, grab the flag or arm the bomb or whatever and get out of there. Yeah. And it was just so small that it was kind of like the counter to the advantages that the defending team had. And I feel like in Halo 3 with the Last Resort, it's so big that the defending team doesn't even have to go outside the base.
And I think
they can just set up in the base.
I think you're talking about the relative size versus the surrounding area, you know, because the base itself is. You know, if you include the back and the different exits that you can block and stuff, it's a little bit bigger in Zanzibar. But I mean, if you know all that area and stuff and all the different entrances, I mean, it's potentially about the same size. There's a little variation there, but I think more it's that you can easily you don't have to cover a lot of ground to get between the seawall and the base. In Last Resort, so
yeah,
I don't know. I think that comes into a factor as well.
Well, there's just been like moments where the boxes on Last Resort that I guess are supposed to be there in like representation of the original kind of electrical pillars that you could destroy back in Zanzibar. Mm-hmm. Like I've been in situations where people will like hide behind the boxes, and like I've looked around the base like in times where if that were Zanzibar, I would just be in there. I would already see them. They would be dead. I would jump down, grab the flag, or do whatever, and be out of there. But like there's so much space between the boxes and so much area to hide in that I'll be in there. I'll think it's clear. You know, I'll grab the flag, and then all of a sudden, five people jump out behind a box. I'm like, where were you? Like, how did you get behind there? Like,
yep. Now, help me out here. In Halo 3 versus Halo 2, remember Halo 2, people really liked the things that would change the entire map. Like, for instance, the in Zanzibar, there was the switch that would open the gate and let everybody in. Now, in Halo 3, was there anything that really, like, came to the Halo 2 level of interaction like that on maps?
No. I mean, high ground, I guess you can compare it to that. But
yeah. Yeah, kind of the big gate opening in the middle, but even that didn't have that much of a tactical advantage.
Then you have like Relic because with the teleporter switch on Relic, and you have the gate entrances on Containment. You have more switch interaction on the Halo 2 maps than Halo 3.
You know, it's funny because I remember people were that was a big thing in the community. People were like, "In Halo 3, we want to see more of that."
Yeah,
and it didn't happen, did it?
Almost like
it seemed like it was even worse. It's like it didn't even exist at all in Halo 3. I mean, it existed to some extent, but not the extent that it showed up in Halo 2.
That's what
and
I'm saying,
I like that kind of stuff. I like that dynamic, you know, dynamic map kind of.
It's almost like they simplified it down for
for the sake of competitiveness, and that's what I'm saying is death by committee. You know, I'm sure people were all gung-ho about that at Bungie, and I can imagine like a staff meeting talking about that, like, you know, hey, the fans really want this, you know, and we think it's a great idea. And people are going, oh, but you see, we got to balance it because this is an MLG game now we're talking about. So we need absolute balance on every level.
Yeah,
everybody
but
needs to be exactly even.
Yeah, but see, MLG doesn't use every single map. That's the point. It's like use it on the maps you know aren't going to be MLG picks, like Valhalla for one. And I'm sure there's plenty of others that aren't used. Last Resort, the gate. I don't know. The gate on Last Resort is really not effective at all.
Yeah.
Because you can just jump over it. Okay, whip
DPS. Yeah, I mean, it's not a gate. It's literally like those little things that they use in parking lots that cut your tire if you go over them the wrong way.
Yeah.
that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I can jump over the things in the parking lot, too. If I'm not in a vehicle, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
While we're on the topic, another thing I wanted to address before we got to the submissions, and I think this has kind of already been established, but favorite maps from Halo 2.
Yeah, I think this is kind of carrying over into what we were talking about before with I'm sure Brent and I will both agree that Headlong is among the top maps, definitely.
Oh yeah. It's in my top three, I think.
You know, that didn't have, I don't think, any interactive elements, did it?
No, but that map was so well designed and so many factors went in the way that you interacted with that map that it didn't matter. I mean, the way you played around that map.
It almost felt like it anyway. Because, like, for instance, it was a one-sided, it was a non-symmetrical map, so asymmetrical. And it was a generally like a capture the flag or one bomb kind of map. You had defenders, you had an assault kind of team. And assault team had, you know, two warthogs. Defending team had basically Covenant ships. And there was you know, a lot of ways into the base. But the thing is, what was really cool is like one flag capture the flag. When people would grab the flag, they would finally get up there and get it. And you know, it was definitely possible. It wasn't that difficult. Once they would get it, if they would jump and then throw it off the end of that multi-story building. It was on after that. Like, they had the advantage, and it was absolute, like, frag fest to try to, like, you're in this wide open area in the middle. If they can grab the flag and they can run it a couple feet, they're getting an advantage every time. So it's like, you got tanks over there, you got all this stuff, like, in this open area trying to stop these guys from jumping in and grabbing the flag, you know, and just moving it a couple feet. And it was always, like, this frantic rush to try to keep them from getting it. But... yeah, I just remember there was a lot of good times with that. Like, oh, you know, he's coming out of the side, he's coming over there, you know, take him. And everybody's, like, trying to concentrate fire on these guys that are coming, and they're jumping down, and they're coming around the corners.
You guys might be able to answer this better than I can, since I haven't played Halo 2 that much, but is it just me, or does it seem like a lot of the players in Halo 3 aren't as cooperative team-wise as they were in Halo 2?
No, it was the same way in Halo 2.
The same way? Okay.
Exactly the same way. The difference, though... and I want to make this clear. The difference is that in Halo 2, there were many more circumstances where I would go in with a full team than there was in Halo 3. I mean, as far as party-wise. I would go in to matchmaking with people that I knew. But in Halo 3, I can't... I have a hard time getting seven other people to go with me into big team battle.
I mean, I
have a hard time finding three other players to go into Team Slayer, but that wasn't an issue back in Halo Tuesday. I mean, like I was saying earlier... I mean, back in Halo 2, there were situations where you'd have too many people in your party. You'd have to cut them if you wanted to go into matchmaking, unless you wanted to go into, like, a social playlist.
I mean, whenever I go into a lot of the social playlists now for Halo 3, it seems like I always come across those few idiots that manage to get on my team, and I'm pulling the full weight of my team, and I lose by 10 points or something like that. It just really frustrates the heck out of me.
Well, there was plenty of that in Halo 2 as well. There was people that were team killers that would just go and, like, as soon as the game starts, they would just start killing their own team. I don't know
why.
You'd be,
like, negative 10 within 5 seconds of the game starting.
Yeah, they thought it was really funny for some reason.
That was hilarious.
But if I remember right, you can't do this in Halo 3, but in Halo 2, you could vote to boot someone.
Yep.
Right?
So, you hit hold X to player or whatever.
But it was because... what I forget, there was some kind of workaround that they had going where if they were team killing, they were getting negative kills, so it didn't count or something. I can't remember how that worked. It's been a long time.
Well, the reason they did that is because in theory you would have circumstances where you would actually do an accidental suicide, and they didn't want to have a situation where you would have an accidental like suicide or betrayal, and then you just get booted for that accident.
Wasn't there a 30-second or a 1-minute cooldown time for that?
I don't think it was that necessarily. I think it was like Brent was talking about. You can't actually boot someone if they haven't gotten any kills or something. You can't boot someone because of a player kill. You can only boot someone for other reasons. I can't remember.
But I think that if they meleeed you and you died, it gave them a bigger chance of being bootable or something.
Something like that. But they were able to get around the booting system by team killing. And they would just do it the whole game just to tick people off, and it was just obviously really annoying. But obviously that's what they were going for. Like, oh, I'm going to annoy people. It's going to be great.
It's going to be funny. It's hilarious.
Some people would intentionally level down just so that they could level back up, and that was really bizarre too. It's like this is the whole point of the game, to level up. But I guess they were just getting so worked at the level they were at. They were like, well, I'm going to go down and pull in some noobs, you know.
I know, man. It's time for some new pony. Right. I got to drop about 10 levels.
I can't hack the level I'm currently at, so I'm going to take some people at a lower level than me.
That'll fix them up.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things around Halo 2 as well was the big customs culture around there. And that's one thing I was really into. So,
bubble bath.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And then it got ported over to Halo 3.
That was a big one, definitely. And that's one JVB, actually. That was his very first call-in on the Customs of Call-In show. He called in this custom game called Team Bubble Bath, and he said, it's reminds me of when I take a bubble bath with my uncle. And
but then someone made the game type when we actually started playing it as a community. That was the funny part.
Yep. And the game is insane. It's like it was on, what was that, High Ground, right?
It was on Zanzibar.
I can't remember the names. But Zanzibar, it was out on the water, and it would just be needlers only, and it would be in kind of an enclosed area. So that all these needles flying around would cause so much lag that it was just hardly very, very difficult to tell like what even was going on.
Oh,
it was like half a frame a second. So
it happens in Halo 3 as well, and actually when the Pink Fury was on, that'd be one of the game types in our rotation was Team Bubble Bath.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
Awesome.
Good deal.
Yeah, we had like Team Bubble Bath 6.0. It was boxed in, and we get needlers, and we'd shoot them. I actually got pretty decent at it, how to dodge it and get like triple kills off of people.
Yeah, it becomes you can definitely get good at that game. It's almost like
it becomes a goal of what's the highest killing spree you can get. That's the goal.
Yep.
That's the goal of that game time is what can I get my highest spree at?
You gotta jump around and try to flank people and everything and
jump around.
Tower of Power on Ascension.
Oh, that is so much.
Oh yeah.
I was gonna say that, man. You know what's funny is like back in the day, Brent was talking about how he has trouble getting a party of four together now, mm-hmm. But you know, back when Halo 2 was big, dude, I used to go in and I would sign on, I would send invite all friends, and in 2 minutes or less, usually, I would have 16 people in there. Bam.
Yep.
And
it was crazy back then.
We would do all kinds of awesome customs and everything. It was super fun, man. But the thing is, Tower of Power on Ascension, which I'll let you explain, but I just want to say that with that game, it was really fun, but it got overplayed to the point where every single time people were saying like, "What custom should we play next?" there would be three or four kids that would go, "Tower of Power, Tower of Power." It'd be like, "Oh my gosh, I played so much freaking Tower of Power. I'm just Tower
of Power now." You get tired of it after a while. I mean, it was.
Yeah. Anyway, it's fun that it goes to 250 kills, so it's like, oh man, it's a long game.
Okay,
for the uninitiated, Tower of Power on Ascension, at least, were there other maps with Tower of Power?
You
think you could do it on Foundation, couldn't you?
You could do it on Knockout,
I think Foundation was another map, and then Lockout.
And they tried to recreate it in Halo 3, it just never caught on.
Yeah, but Foundation, it didn't really work too well.
Well, I mean, with Foundation, it was kind of cool because there wasn't any one tower, I guess. There was no, you know, tower of power, per se. There were multiple towers and multiple ways of getting around it.
What was really frustrating is when people would destroy the turret.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Huh?
Oh, that was awful, man.
And it wouldn't respawn for 20 minutes.
And you just sit there. Yeah.
If your game lasted that long, you would wait 20 minutes until it respawned. and then it's another full rush to the tower. Who can get there first?
Yep.
And it's a 5-minute on-out battle because you have all four teams just sitting there trying to get the tower.
Yep.
And then you would have random people join and make these, like, one-man teams and just go on killing sprees. And be like, what the heck?
So, Brent, explain how the game works, man.
Okay, so on Ascension, you set weapons to, I think it was plasma pistols only?
No.
Is that the
shotguns.
No weapon. Oh,
Shotguns, no shields.
Okay, shotguns, no shields.
No grenades.
No. Was there a...
I know it. I can say it if you want.
Was there a melee setting?
No.
Or could you set melee? No. Anyway, regardless, there's a turret on the top of the tower on Ascension. And essentially, you're vying for control of this tower because once you have the turret, you can just mow down all of these, you know, people with no shields that are trying to run up on the tower.
Because nobody had guns or any shields.
Yeah. And they didn't, yeah, they couldn't shoot you from afar because they only had shotguns. But they could in theory, get up on the tower if they slipped past you and you didn't see it. And then they would run up the tower and kill you and then take control of the turret. And they would just go on from there. But you'd get, like, some people would get 40 or 50 kills at a time on the turret, just sitting there, you know, mowing people down.
Yeah, but then there was that bridge on the side where the turret couldn't get it. And that's where everyone went, was that bridge.
Well, if there was you could see a certain extent. You could see a certain part of the bridge.
Well,
but at a certain point, the turret wouldn't turn that far. It didn't have that, you know, that angle of firing. So once you got that far, then you had to actually make your way up the tower because they could still shoot you. Your team can still, like, sit at the tower and wait for people to come up and kill them. Yeah. So, I mean, once you're past the turret, you're not out of the woods completely. You still got to, you know, fight through the other team that's sitting in the tower.
Staying alive.
So that's the thing, is like you're in this tower that's like on a there's at least what, three levels, right?
Four.
Yeah, there's
four?
The
four.
Bottom
five.
Four.
Actually, you can almost consider it five, because you have the bottom where you're coming up, and then you have the flat where it splits out in two, and then you have the third level where you have the three ends and the one out up there. And then you have the fourth where you go up the ramp, but there's the window in the back where people usually jump
there.
You in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the fourth one. And actually, I found a little spot where you can, if you are on the ledge that's on the light side of that tower, you can actually jump up and shotgun some of the guys that are standing in that window. Like, you could hit them three times and you can kill them. Yeah.
There's a bunch of little, like, places you can kind of hide in the defenders. There's at least, like, three or four different, like, little tactical places that you can kind of crouch into or jump onto or things like that.
The one place I really hate the most is up in the little turret area, there's a little triangle piece.
Yeah.
That, I hate that.
There's, like, a triangle hole where you could, like, you could kind of step onto there, and then you crouch down and kind of move in, and you can't even stand up because you're crouched and you're kind of stuck because of the triangle. So you
sit there. It really pisses me off.
I used to sit there all the time, dude. That was my spot.
That was an awesome spot, yeah.
I probably hit you a bunch of times. That was a good one. But yeah, it was this, that was a cool map though. It's like, the thing is that the spawns were always right in the middle where the turret was firing at. So it's like you spawned, it was almost like you were on D-Day and you had to run away from the turret that was firing at you. And if you lived long enough, you got past the point where you could get around to that bridge he was talking about and kind of go in on the side and flank the turret. And that was the idea, is you would have a whole bunch of people that would go on that bridge. And, of course, they'd meet heavy resistance on the bridge. There was always, like, a giant, like, shotgun battle on that bridge. Everybody was just shotgunning back and forth. But if you were lucky enough to your guys killed all their guys, you know, as they were going through the 3 seconds to spawn or whatever, you could go up and you can get all the way around long enough to keep pushing the line forward until you're almost to going flanking them, going in the back up to the turret yourself. And if you can actually go and kill all the guys, including the guy in the turret, then you become the team that controls the Tower of Power. And that's the whole concept of the game. It's super fun. It's just that it went so long.
Oh, yeah. I mean, playing it to like 250
yeah.
would be so much fun.
It was like half an hour. I mean, it was quite a
game.
Oh,
yeah. It was fun. But, I mean, that even reminds me of at LAN parties when we would do CTF, three-flag CTF on coagulation, and it would take 4 hours to play one match.
Ugh.
4 hours.
Man, for that's
capturing the flag. Another reason why you can't really do Tower of Power on Halo 3 is because the turrets are detachable. And the whole honor system's kind of broken, it seems like, in Halo 3.
Well, there was honor systems in Halo 2 as well, like with zombies.
Zombies, yes. Oh, yeah.
Now, zombies was, before zombies was in Halo 3, it was in Halo 2 as an honor system game where people would have to change their team color to green when they got killed. And then they became a zombie, and at that point they only had swords, or they could only use swords. So,
yeah, about that.
And that was typically played, what, Foundation, right?
Yes.
Yep.
That was a super cool map for that too, because like you could do all kinds of cool stuff. Like you could hold yourself up in a room, and you could try to defend against the zombies as they keep coming in and they keep respawning and trying to sword you, but they're too far away. So like you have limited ammo and there's no ammo respawns in that room, but you're trying to just like try to kill them all as they come in, and you're one-shotting them all because they have no shields. But you're just, you know, they're coming in, they're trying to sword you, and they can't get around, and you're just just taken out over and over, and eventually they overwhelm you, and it's like, ah.
The only thing is with that, though, you have to make sure that people implement the game type correctly, because for at least a lot of the games I've played, everyone implements their zombies really differently, and some have where they have weapons on the map, so you have infinite ammo, which really sucks. And then for like the zombies, since you have to start out with one weapon and sword for so you can have both teams, it came down to, okay, if I go in there and I die, I'm giving them more ammunition.
Yeah.
So you had to waste.
So
all
you would
your
go
ammo.
Waste all your ammo before
yeah.
you went in.
Yeah, before you went in, and we actually a couple games I played, we would all gather up zombies, waste ammo, and then we would it'd be like. A 10-on-4 for the humans that were left in this one room. And then we would all charge in at once, and one of us would be able to get one guy, and then all of us would die. We would all line up again, do it again.
It's funny because you think, like, okay, there is no way they're going to be able to take us all down. And we're going to all go in as a team, and it's going to be no problem. And then you all go in, and you all die within 2 seconds. And it's like, man, how did they do that? Come on. Those headshots, man, they're just instant kills, so and they're firing pretty quick. And in Halo 2, the Magnums, man, those were fast.
Yeah, it's as fast as you can pull the trigger, wasn't it?
Yeah, those were entirely different than the Magnums in Halo 3 or Halo 1 or Halo Reach, I'm sure, ODST, all that stuff. So
the Halo 3 Magnums are kind of crappy.
Yeah, actually, from what I understand, Halo Reach is going to be kind of a mix kind of deal. It doesn't have, between Halo 2 and Halo 3 kind of thing, it doesn't have like a set rate that you can fire. I just read this the other day. But it has, you can fire as fast as you want, but the faster you fire, the more squirrely it gets. And the more, you know.
The more or less accurate with the whole reticle expansion thing?
Yeah, that and the, you know, the kick and everything else. So,
See, that's almost adopting a Battlefield style of shooting.
Yeah.
What they're doing with that. So, I think it's not going to actually take too much away from it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, with a lot of the weapons that you almost auto-fire a lot in Halo 2, most of them kind of get a little less accurate anyways.
Not the BR.
Well, yeah, not the BR.
This is true.
And that's the only weapon I ever use.
But I think, because, I mean, for a lot of games, if you're zoomed in, that difference changes very little. To when you're zoomed out. Like, when you're zoomed out, it has a drastic effect on how accurate it is. But when you're zoomed in, it's not as drastic of an effect. aiming wise. So I don't know.
So what other weapons were different between Halo 2 and Halo 3?
Dual wielding with the Needler.
BR.
Yeah, Needler. That was a big difference.
Yeah,
thing.
Big difference.
Plasma pistol. You could almost consider the plasma pistol one too, because the plasma pistol in Halo 3 actually stalls vehicles now.
Yeah. And it has a less drastic lock on feature too.
Much less, yeah.
Oh yeah.
In Halo 2, for those of you that don't know, there was something called the noob combo.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was noob combo. And it got to where, you know,
I use that in Halo 3 too.
Do you? And it works sometimes if you're really good at aiming and if they're far enough away. If they're too close, they can easily sidestep it. But if they're far enough away, then you can use it pretty well, you know? It works pretty well. And the way that works is that you charge up a plasma pistol shot, you fire it at them, it takes out their shields, you switch weapons right after you shoot it, and then you switch to a BR and hit it with a headshot, and it's basically an instant kill.
Yep.
Because it hits the plasma pistol shot right before the BR, and it's just bam. So it's might as well be a sniper rifle to the head.
You lose.
And it tracks super tight in Halo 2 as well. So it's like, it was really, once you got to it, you understood what you parts, like the way you could and couldn't dodge it. You know, like if you were in the open, forget it. There's nothing you could do. But if you have some kind of cover around, or if you can sidestep it the right way, then you figured out ways to combat it. But it was basically a power weapon. If someone like, One person would get rockets, one person would get sniper, and one person would get noob combo.
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah. That was the setup right there. That was the theme.
It was so frustrating being noob comboed. Because you felt like you were being cheated.
But there was...
I know.
That combination. What do you do?
It's just like camping. It's a legitimate strategy.
Yep.
I know, it almost seemed like there was a second noob combo too with the SMG and plasma rifle, or pistol and plasma rifle.
That's true. Plasma rifle was really good at taking down shields, and by design, you know.
Really quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Of course, you know, you still got to get that headshot off, and it's a little easier to get it at mid-range with the noob combo than it is with the plasma rifle, because it doesn't track. So that was only good at close range, and since the closer the range, the easier it is for them to sidestep, it was harder to get the headshot. So that's a little trickier.
Yeah. I just remember you watching you in Pod TV episode 4 lay down some smack on Bungie.
Yeah. Man, I remember that that first match we had with Bungie, and we were all planning it out and trying to get the right, you know, trying to decide who was going to be in the game and everything. And I remember we had that first game, and what was that game type called? That was a custom that was you had to get in the hill in the middle.
King of the
low hill, right?
Or low hill, yeah.
Yeah, low ball okay. Hill or low hill.
Low hill.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, that
was
that's
a great
tough.
Game.
I bet that's tough. Because low hill is basically, for those who don't know, is where your score is based on the lowest scoring person, right?
Right, and it's the amount of time. It's up to like a minute or whatever you set it to.
Right.
So the lowest scoring person on your team has to have a minute in the hill. So that got interesting because you're always trying to help the lowest person get in the hill. Like once you get your minute, you're like, okay, I'm done. Now I'm gonna go up top and get a sniper rifle or get rockets or get grenades and just like spam grenades in there and keep them out of the hill. So
hey Fuma, remember that one Halo 3 custom I joined in on your team? It was low hill on it was the elevated one where you had the stuff flying on top.
That was the thing about low hill. If someone joins in the middle of the game, you're screwed.
Yep.
Because then they have zero.
And you're like, oh, so much so for having 59 seconds.
Yep, you always got to set the party to closed as soon as you start a low hill game. So I probably forgot to do that. Then it was like, oh, man, you messed us up.
Yeah, I remember joining your game, and it's like, oh.
Yeah, that was the thing about that. But we played that against Bungie, and that was our first match against Bungie, and it was a 1 second game. We won it by 1 second. And
really?
They were ahead within 5 seconds before that. extremely close. So, and that we ended up winning that challenge, and that was one of the two games we won. So, that was something else, man. That was a really close game. It was super fun, though.
I wish they would invite us back to a hump day.
Yeah.
No, do they still do those anymore?
Yeah, they still do them.
I haven't seen them.
Okay.
Which B-net have you been reading, Dustin?
The secret B-net.
Internet Archive B-net?
No, I subscribe to the news feed.
I guess they do. I don't pay attention to the news feed that much, I guess.
They have them every now and then.
So a couple more quick customs that they had that were cool. Two of my favorites were Tremors and Frogger. So Tremors was you have to get you have to get across the map.
Of,
if I remember right, you couldn't go on the ground at all. You had to be on vehicles or on rocks or something.
Well, I think the thing was there were ghosts around, and if you were if you were on the ground, you could go on the ground, but then you were at risk of getting rammed by the ghost.
Yeah, so you were like free. You were open target if you were on the ground.
Right.
So it was kind of like the movie Tremors. If anyone remembers, that's an old movie. But,
yeah. If you stand on a rock, you're fine. If you're Kevin Bacon, you know you're all right. If you're anyone else, you're not.
Good to go.
Get on the rock.
So everybody tried to get from one base to the other on Tremors, and it was a similar concept in Frogger, but that was like super fun, man. Because like one team on Frogger, the concept was one team got all the vehicles in the entire game, and they would go and it was on coagulation. So one team would get all vehicles in both bases, and that was the vehicle team, right? And it was kind of like Frogger, and the other team was the frogs, and the idea is they have to go. If you can get from one base to the other without dying, then you change color to the next color up the list. And you keep going until you're all the way at the end, which is pink, and the first person to pink wins. And above that, there's no rules except for you can't board vehicles or something like that. Since you're the frogs, you can't get on the vehicles.
That's
so
cool.
It was so much fun because there was just vehicles flying all over the place trying to get people. And guys were just jumping around all over the place trying to avoid the vehicles splattering them and stuff. They were just boing, boing, boing across the whole map. And, oh, man, there was, like, so many near misses and guys that would, like, there would be Jeeps that would go and, like, try to attack them and flip over and smash into something and blow up the Jeep. Or there would be the Covenant Jets that would fly down and they would try to splatter someone. They would miss them and they would crash into a Jeep or something. They would both blow up. There was all kinds of crazy stories like that. It was funny.
That reminds me of the game type. I don't know if this was prevalent in Halo 2 or not, but I know in Halo 2 Vista, there was a game type called Lava Man.
Oh, yeah.
And basically that one was the defending team could only attack you if you were on the ground. So if you were on like a elevated building or ramp or vehicle or something, not touching the ground, they couldn't kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a CTF, best of six.
Nice. That's pretty cool. So, yeah. There's all kinds of cool games like that. There's just that, tons of great game types.
Another one I remember was Godfather.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go?
It was interesting, to say the least. And then for, I don't know, when you guys did the farewell to Halo 2 when Halo 3 came out, what was the game type where it was Lockout and there was basically like a big punching arena on top of Lockout?
That was a big one. It was Fight Club. That's
Fight Club.
Yep.
That
was a great one.
Yeah, that one.
Now, the way that worked is that there was a hill in the center, and it was King of the Hill. And everybody just had plasma pistols, so there was no grenades. So, really, the whole game was about melees. And you would get a full party of, like, 16 people in there. And people would be spawning all over the place outside the hill. And they would all go for the center top on Lockout, like, above glass. So people would just go in there, and it would just be a total melee fest, and there'd be bodies everywhere and guns everywhere and stuff, and it was just a total mess. And there, you could try to do like different little strategies, but they were only marginally successful. Like I had this one where basically like you back up against the wall, If your back is kind of like towards the library.
Yeah.
But the hill didn't go all the way up to the wall. So you still had a little bit of space behind you. And I would just kind of like crouch down and keep meleeing, because inevitably someone is going to come right in front of my melee because there's so many people in the hill. Yeah. But but man, that sometimes kept me alive for like 2 or 3 seconds, and that's about it.
Yeah, hopefully. It
was so tough.
I think we're going to plan like a final day of Halo, and we're just going to go all out with how many people we can get on all these game types.
Sweet.
And I'm going to record it. So,
ew.
Yeah, it'll be nice.
Good game. What was that? Was it Relic that had the ramps on the side that were removable depending on the game type? And then it was once you get the flag, it was like right on the edge of this kind of cliff on this central island part. And you could jump off of it and go right to the flag turn spot.
I don't remember any removable ramps.
On Relic. The only removable ramp that I can remember from Halo 2, and I'm sure there's another one, but the only one I remember is the one on Colossus, the middle ramp. It can be taken off for objective game types. That connects the two bases.
Which one's Colossus?
Colossus is the Covenant energy plant with the fuel. It's got the conveyor belts that have the fuel cells that keep... Once the fuel cells like hit the main lift, they like go up in the air or whatever.
I'm looking at it. I'm trying to find a picture.
Up in the air. See, I'm thinking of
it. It was the map.
Okay.
I really enjoyed
that. Okay, I remember that one.
Well.
It was like purple.
Yeah.
It was the purple map.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's the one. In fact, we did another one on that. You know what? That reminds me of another custom that was like one of the most awesome customs ever. It was called Song Ball.
I remember that.
That was the greatest game ever. Oh my gosh.
Where if you had
okay.
to, oh, you had to sing.
The way Songball works is that you it's a oddball game, and it's free for all oddball on Colossus. I don't know why it was always on Colossus, but probably just because it was so open. It was on Colossus, and once you get the ball, you have to sing a song while you have the ball. But it can't be the same song that someone else is saying. And it can be any song as long as you don't just make it up. So it can be like whatever, a commercial or a cartoon or a real song or whatever. It can be anything. And people would come up with the craziest songs like that they would sing and stuff. It was like, and some people just couldn't think of a song. So they were just like, ah, la, 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 and they would die.
I forgot.
And it was always just like, they would start a song like, I know a song that gets a blah, and they would die.
I forgot about that.
That was so much fun, man. There was some times where everybody was just cracking up the whole time.
I'm sure. It'd be hard to kill the guy because you're so messed up laughing at the time.
It's like you're running all over the place. There's 16 people trying to get to this ball. You're trying to get to this ball, and by the time you're getting close, you're like, oh, crap, I haven't thought of a song. And, I mean, how many songs are there? There's like 50 million songs in the world, and you can't think of a single song.
Exactly. But how many do you know? I mean, there's a lot of songs that you might remember, but it's hard to remember some of the lyrics for some of them. So I can imagine, you know, not knowing the lyrics to a song, thinking of one like,
yeah,
or like, I don't know. We need to play that for the farewell event that
we're just about to get the ball, and someone sings your song, and you're like, hey, you took my song. No. Now I gotta think of another before I get the ball.
Now,
how dare you take Total Eclipse of the Heart by Bonnie Tyler?
Now, how
that was fun.
How about Ivory Tower? That was another big one back in the day.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember, I'm trying to remember the big game type for that. There was a.
I remember a lot of Slayer on it.
Yeah, I remember a lot of One Flag for some reason.
Ivory Tower? What was that?
Ivory Tower was the one that was set in the interior of a building in New Mombasa, and it had kind of the indoor garden, and it had the waterfall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know what? Juggernaut was a lot on that one. You know what it was? Predator.
Yep.
Remember that?
I remember that.
It's really weird, because kind of going through all these maps, it's almost like each one has its own assigned custom game type.
I know, it did.
Yep.
So Predator was a Juggernaut game where the Juggernaut was always invisible, had super speed, and had a sword. So it was very similar to, you know, the Predator in the movie. Mm-hmm. So It was interesting though, because like you had to, you couldn't have too many people, because as soon as you became Predator, you were instantly recognized and they would just take you right back out again. Yeah. So it would just be like a trail of Predators that would keep dying. So you had to have time. You had to have few enough people so you could kill someone and still get away without getting killed.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm just going to go through the rest of the maps here and then we'll get to the submissions.
Cool.
Burial Mounds.
Yeah, we talked about that.
We did?
We talked about the glitches. I don't think we talked about gameplay on the map.
Think we had a game.
I remember that map was really, really good for
territories.
For one map or one flag. I don't know what I said. One map. One map burial mounds.
I see a lot of territories on it.
They had that thing where you could like take the Jeep in and grab the flag. There was two different ways you could go in. You could either go in through the left or you could go all the way around through the back. But the back was always the best because you could get out of the Jeep, go in, and if you were lucky and if you did well, you could take out enough guys in the base, take out two or three guys, jump back in the Jeep and like drive through there, stop on the flag, jump out, grab it, jump right back in, and before you died, you know, you went flying over the end of the base and then you're home free. That was a great. That's kind of like Headlong, you know. As soon as you get over the edge of that base, it's like frantic to try to stop them.
Yeah. Once the flag is down from its perch, once it's down in that kind of central area where it usually went, it was like a huge battle to try and get the flag recovered. And then once it reached like a certain point, it was, you know, all downhill from there, and the team would mostly have it.
Yeah.
Trying to remember other game types. I remember you could play Assault on Burial Mounds. That was pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty cool because like once you got in there, if you had enough guys, you could stop the bomb. It was always like a hair's breadth like distance on how you could on whether you can arm the bomb or not. You know, you get in there, you're taking damage, you're trying to arm the bomb. It's like 3 seconds, you know, and there's guys shooting at you from all ends. You got your teammates that are dying all around you, trying to defend you and everything, and you just arm it right before you die. And then it's like, oh crap, we got to defuse it. And then you got guys coming in all over the place. So, oh man, that's great.
Yeah. Okay. Beaver Creek.
That was famous for Low Hill, definitely.
Yeah, Two Flag was a big thing. I remember on Beaver Creek, Two Flag was kind of weird because you could there was these little holes in the bases that you could throw the flag through. So you could be on the outside of the base, throw it through that little window, and someone on the inside catch the flag and then like score it immediately.
Well, because there was like a central point of the flag where it was collision geometry, and not the whole flag was collision geometry.
Right. I don't think there was collision geometry on the flag at all as far as windows went.
Yeah.
Like if you were at a window, you could get it, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you could just take it around the back and go to the teleporter and go to the other side.
Uh-huh. I mean, you could flag jump that in about 10 seconds almost, right?
Because you had to have, like, obviously you had to have teamwork. You could throw it out the window and grab it on the other side, and then you had to go through the teleporter and then throw it up on top of the, or through it through the window again. Usually throw it up and someone's waiting in the other base, and they catch it up top, and then they drop it in and they plant it. So you have to have two people that are kind of catchers. So it's kind of a pass off.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Two catchers, one pitcher, and then one guy just sitting trying to get rockets. I remember on Colossus, there was I think they patched it eventually, but there was a deal where if you threw the two flag was a big deal on Colossus. But once you grabbed the flag, there was a way that if you threw the flag the right way, like down to the bottom floor, which was where the conveyor belts were. If it hit the conveyor belt at the right way, it would bounce like off the conveyor belt all the way onto the other side, onto your base, where you could basically just run over and catch it and score it immediately.
It was a giant U-shaped map with a big drop in the middle that was probably a good three stories, although there wasn't, you know, total really stories in between. It just was big ramps down. So, so you would normally you would have to go all the way around the U-shape to the other corner. Yeah. To the other end of the U, but this way you could circumvent the U and drop it all between the two points of the U and just bounce it between them and then catch it on the other side. Yeah, I think they did patch that eventually, but that was a big thing and people were really frustrated with that.
Bye.
Yep. It wasn't that hard to do if you knew what you were doing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty easy.
Backwash.
Oh no, we played that map because it had an issue where the fog effect on Backwash would cause massive lag over Xbox Live. So that map was never really in matchmaking rotation, and it didn't see a lot of custom play either.
That one was used for Predator a lot.
Yeah.
That was a perfect map for Predator as well, because of the fog, you could see
blend
the Predator coming
so well. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good atmosphere.
Waterworks.
Ooh, I love Waterworks. And like a lot of people that I've talked to, they hate it, but I love Waterworks.
It's a great map. Yeah, you have there was some really good sniper perches in the middle that were almost kind of hidden. There was the vehicles all around the back of each base. There was the you could get in through with the Warthog by going all the way around. You could go in, obviously there was the caves as it went along the sides and everything. There was just a lot of great stuff on that map.
Just
really
cool. so many locations on that map that you could be at. Like thematically, just being in this massive cavern with like things in it, these massive constructions inside this cavern is pretty cool. I remember the stalagmites that you could shoot down.
Yeah.
And you could land on vehicles and blow them up.
Yeah, it'd destroy them. I think you can destroy a wraith that way if I remember right. But yeah. I mean, it was tough. It had to hit them like head on. But
yep, and in one hit, you could destroy them. Yeah.
I remember
that was
popular,
great. You always had to watch out for snipers on that. That was pretty tactical. Yeah. It was a really great big team map though, because if you work together, you could really do well on that map.
So. Oh yeah, you could coordinate right.
And that was a symmetrical map with a really big obstruction in the middle, so it was definitely interesting.
I really enjoyed Two Flag and Neutral Assault on
Neutral Assault.
Because there was this one little bridge in the middle, and essentially you'd start the match and you'd get your tank and you'd get all your vehicles and you'd make a mad dash for the middle. Yeah. And there's this
it was tank versus tank explosions everywhere.
Tank on tank action going on.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember one thing about Neutral is on that is because it was such a big map, it's like once they get the bomb and you don't know where they are, it's like, oh, crap, where are they? Where are they coming from?
Yeah, because there's the two...
Like a moment of fear where you don't know which way they're going to go in.
Well, there's the two long tunnels on the side, and then you have the middle bridge, and then you have the two extensions of that middle bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the back where they could come in. So there were lots of attack vectors on that map.
Or you could drop in from the top with a Banshee.
Banshee. Yep.
Yeah.
And remember, there was a whole bunch of little like tactics you could do to block off the base completely in defense. You could get a Wraith and get these gigantic boxes that were laying around.
Yeah, I remember the boxes.
Completely block them off. You can't even get into the base except for through the top. So. Yeah, and then you could block the top with a Banshee, if I remember right. So, technically, you could block off the entire base. Of course, if they get through, then it was always trouble because, like, they get through, they get out, and you're like, you can't chase them because you're trying to jump over these stupid boxes that you just put there.
Yeah, you block yourself in.
Yep.
Yeah.
So sometimes it worked against you. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I remember busting off the wings off of Banshees to get inside the bases on, like, Coagulation and Waterworks. Yeah.
Yeah.
You get someone to bust your wings off.
Yep.
Okay.
Funny.
Desolation. That was one of the newer maps.
That's one of the newer ones. That was the last map pack.
Yeah. So probably not much in development there.
I didn't play
like
that much.
I personally don't like it.
Next map.
Next map, how about Gemini?
Ooh. That was one of the newer maps that came out. That was I think it was the map pack before the Blastacular map pack that had Desolation in it.
Yeah, that one. I've played a lot of Oddball, One Flag CTF, and Juggernaut.
Yeah.
Okay,
I think
well,
I remember.
Which one were we on? I was just looking up Desolation.
Gemini.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. That was a We did this certain. I'm trying to remember what the game type we did on that was. I remember there was a lot of like, we would go up like on the
the perches.
Oddball game, because we would go up like on those on those perches, and then we would like try to fire at the other guys across the other perches and everything.
Oh, from the teleporters.
Yeah, the teleporters led to these perches that were on the top, and you could like jump down and get on top of the tree in the center or whatever.
Yeah,
it was some kind of oddball game. It was some variant that was pretty close to just regular old oddball, I think. Or maybe even it was Juggernaut or something like that. But yeah, that was a cool one for either one of those, really.
Talking about these customs is making me like super nostalgic. Like,
I know.
I need to play them like right now.
I already like, traded my game.
We'll have a chance to play them all next week, and we'll probably need to write these down.
We need to write all of these down. I mean, we got it in recorded format at least, but
I'll designate you to go back, listen to it, and figure out which ones.
Any more maps that we haven't talked about?
We have a few more. Elongation.
Oh yeah, that's the one with the orbital kind of station that has all the cargo boxes going down the conveyor belts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a remake of a Halo 1 map.
Yeah, longest.
That's a popular SWAT map.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
There was another one we played on that. I'm trying to remember. It was Neutral Bomb. We played on that because there was a lot of like on that bridge in the center that kind of did like an S shape that went across. I remember there was a lot of like beatdowns on that because of the bomb that could like kind of lunge a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a good map for that.
Pretty cool.
Okay, four more. I'll save the better two for last. Turf.
Turf.
Ooh, yeah.
Dude, Turf is so awesome.
Fun stuff on Turf. We played Turf the other day. We did pretty good, Dustin.
Yeah, we did.
Turf was set in, was it old Mombasa? Or no, it was new Mombasa.
Yeah, it was Mombasa.
Yeah, new Mombasa, and a scarab tank has fallen in the center of this, you know, cityscape. And the scarab tank, the ruins of the scarab are kind of the defensive base where the one flag would be, or the bomb, you know, set area. So, and then the attacking team would get a warthog.
Yeah.
be able to just mow down people. And it was funny because you would take this warthog around in these really tight spaces. So, I mean, there wasn't a lot of room to move around in.
Right.
So,
which kind of gimped the warthog a little bit. You know?
Yeah,
except for that one long area. That was about it.
Yeah, but you could get fragged easily in that warthog.
That's true. That was a really good map in matchmaking in general. You know, there was real tight corners and but there was some vertical stuff you could get to if you paid attention as well. And
lots of interesting hiding corners too.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was my favorite part of the map, was just the stealth tactics that you could use. You know, hide somewhere and wait for someone to run by and just assassinate them, or, you know, throw a grenade down, shoot them in the face.
Yeah.
Just, you know, old school stealth tactics.
I remember a good deal of machinimas were done on that map, too.
Oh, yeah. If I remember right, that was actually a big zombies map as well, because you would go by the scarab and you could just hang there.
Yeah.
Try to get them as they come along, and sometimes they could just outnumbered you, or you shot one of them down, and then right as you reloaded, another one came up and fired at you. So.
Then I like how everyone spawned out near the medical tent. Between the medical tent and the warthog was a majority of the spawn points.
Yep. That's true. And they had that one right around the corner, so you had a little bit of cover, so you could you had a chance to get out there. But that medical tent was cool for CTF and everything too.
Yeah.
And man, there was another game type we played there. I can't remember what it was, but I just remember there was some pretty cool game types in that. And there was some good like special jumping that you could do to get to some pretty high places on that too, like high impact Halo style jumping. So,
you know, it'd be cool, and I don't know if they're gonna do. They probably wouldn't do this, but if they did. If Bungie did something like Valve did with Team Fortress, and users can, like, they actually release a kit where you can make your own maps on your computer, and if they, Bungie would take some missions and then, like, maybe every 3 months release a map pack of community maps well done.
Mm-hmm.
That would really keep Reach going, though, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, anyways, Warlock.
Warlock.
I hated that map back in Halo 2, but looking back, it was some of the most fun game types I ever played, some of the, you know, craziest matches. I remember there was this one thing where you would play oddball, and there were areas that you could throw the oddball in to where you couldn't get it back out.
Yep.
So your team would, like, get the advantage in oddball. You'd go 10 seconds up or whatever, throw it into that little location, and you just sit there, and the other team would be trying to, you know, jump at it, you know, grab it, and they couldn't do it. You're just sitting there laughing.
Waiting until it resets.
That was a great oddball map. And
there was something it wouldn't reset if you were next to it or something. there was some way
talking
it
about.
Wouldn't
like,
reset.
It was right by the base, kind of.
Yeah.
Right.
For some reason, the ball wouldn't reset. There was something that your team could do to keep it from resetting, but
okay.
There's just this one little hole you could throw it in. I remember a lot of. It was the only map that really utilized a four-team kind of a dynamic.
Yeah, you could do the four-team game in that. That was really cool.
The only two maps that could really do that well were like Foundation and of course Warlock. But Warlock did it better because it was completely symmetrical. Whereas, the bases were completely the same. But with Foundation, there were only two kind of turrets.
Yeah, that's right.
It was weird.
Those kind of separated those sides that could get to them.
I remember Neutral Flag, or I think it was Neutral Flag, was a big game type for four-player Warlock, or four-team Warlock gameplay.
Yeah, that was really interesting because you had to choose which you had to get the flag back, but it's like you kind of had some team dynamics going on where who's kind of working together to get the flag, and then once they get it, are they going to go against each other and everything else? So
right, if you've got
you had to do like almost like a FFA style kind of thing where you had to kind of have some tactics going where you wait till everybody's weakened and then you go take them out and grab the flag kind of thing.
Yep. Warlock was a lot of fun when you weren't losing an oddball.
there was a lot of oddball on that map because like there was places to get to cover really quickly. So there was possibilities to get out of the line of fire. And there was also and that was really great for oddball. I remember like you could go on top, you could go under those areas that were kind of part like a quarter of the way towards the center of the map. And then, of course, once you got on top, which it was kind of cool because you could go around a corner really, really quickly and you could have some cover from and fire from just about any angle. And that was really good for both oddball and also for King of the Hill on there. You could get some guys that were in that hill and then you could take cover towards the center. And as long as they didn't have guys kind of flanking you, then you were good to go. So, and I remember that one, they also had, I think it was whether it was Rocket Oddball or Rocket King of the Hill on that, but there was just rockets flying everywhere, and yeah, that was a good one too.
Nice. Sanctuary.
Sanctuary.
Oh, what is... Oh, I know, that's the one with the center. It's got the pond in the center.
It has all the water.
Oh, yeah.
It's, it's got that pond that has a central rotunda around it.
As Red versus Blue put it, a water park.
It is a water park. It's awesome. I love Sanctuary. I love how bright it is. I don't know why, but the sun in Sanctuary was pretty cool. Looking back, that's probably not the best reason to enjoy that map. But it's probably the weirdest reason to like that map. Well, what do you like, Sanctuary? The sun's pretty cool. I like the way it's lit.
We did. I remember that was a big map for SWAT and also for some kind of sword game that we played on it. I think it was
sword ball?
Like Sword Oddball.
Yeah, Sword Ball.
Yeah, where there was an oddball, this neutral oddball that spawned in the center, and just or whether it was oddball or whether it was assault, sword assault. I can't remember one of the two, but. I don't know. Assault was really good on that map as well because once you got into the bases, the closer you got to the base, the more vulnerable you were. So it was really hard to plant it. But once you planted it, if you still had some teammates alive, it was pretty hard to take it back. So,
well, there were essentially four entrances to each base. You'd have two ramps, one on the left, one on the right, then a ramp in the center to your base, and then a kind of bridge that connects connects a different area to where the sniper is.
Yeah, so. Kind of adjacent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember playing two flag on Sanctuary. That was fun.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Even one flag was cool too, but the only thing with that is that people would just keep picking up the flag and throwing it and letting it bounce a little bit, pick up and throw it. So it kind of ended up they would get it over there really fast, and they would get out of the line of fire a little bit, so you couldn't get a headshot if you were aiming through the center of the map. So,
yeah.
Well, I think with it was automatically set to CTF Classic when you're playing two flag, where you had to have your flag back at base to score.
So, yeah, that's right. And if you
even
if they touch the flag, it returns instantly, right?
Yeah, it's like flag instant return. So you'd have these situations where each team would have their opponent's flag at their base, but they couldn't do anything with it. So you had to send your own teammates out to go and try and catch the flag at their base, return your own flag so they could score.
Yeah,
and you're just sitting on the score point, just waiting for that flag to return.
Or you're you hiding. Flag in your
hand. Yeah, oh, you're usually hiding to keep a.
Mm-hmm. Good map.
Okay. There's two Halo 2 Vista ones.
I didn't play those.
But yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but we won't go into those. District is one that's kind of like an expansion of Turf, but we won't go into that one. Two more pretty good ones. Midship.
MLG.
Oh, yeah. That was classic map. There's so much great stuff you could do on Midship. One of the ones was where...
Sword.
Everybody had swords and grenades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just constant explosions in the center of the map. Oh. And people would go to the center. And it was there was a King of the Hill in the center of the map. So it was... in fact, I think, you know, we played Low Hill on that. And, No, wait. No, I know what it was. I think it was called Crazy Hill or something, where everybody had random weapons that they spawned with, and it was King of the Hill in the center.
Yep.
So there was just constant explosions from rockets and grenades and stuff all over the place in the center. It was an absolute lava pit if you went in there. But you went in there, you'd stay there for a second or something, and then you'd start over, and hopefully you get rockets.
Oh, jeez.
I remember Midship being the map that I'm not crazy good at Halo, but any skills that I have in regards to Halo, I learned on Midship. I remember it was one of the most popular MLG maps, and it had its own location names like Pink 2, Pink 1. I don't even remember what the other names
were. Yeah, everybody had yeah.
Like yeah, Underbase 1, under like near left, and. If you played MLG, long enough on Midship, you'd get pretty good, shooting that battle rifle. There were a lot of two-flag tactics, I remember, on Midship, where, going back to, the kind of flag tossing, that was a legitimate strategy. You jump down with the flag from one base, you run to the other side, and instead of going up the ramps or taking the lift, if you've got a guy up at the base, you just jump up, throw the flag to him, and he scores. I mean, that's the quickest way to get that flag scored, so.
Yep. Or you have a guy somewhere towards the center, you grab the flag, throw it down to him,
he comes
up and jumps it up and throws it to the guy that's standing at the flag plant spot. So
just keep that chain going.
Yeah.
And you would literally have like two flag games that might last 30 seconds if they're set up right. Like, no joke.
Yeah, and you'd be like, dang, we just got schooled.
Oops.
No kidding.
Yeah, there was some cool stuff in there. There was some good tactics, some good jump tactics and things, and it was really good for two flags. It was decent for one flag too. But I remember one of the cool things too was that it had the King of the Hill where the hill like moved around, and it kept going hill moved, and it would go to like all these crazy spots, and you'd be like, oh crap, I got to get over there, and everybody'd be rushing to that spot and everything. That was a cool one. Oh, and remember Oddball too? You could actually go up and throw the ball like on top of one of the bases to where you can't grab it.
I remember that.
Same concept as that other map we were talking about. Yeah.
Ingenuity.
Yeah.
Halo 2 players had it.
It's true.
Okay. Last one.
Last map. This better be good.
I'm gonna let you try to guess, Brent.
There's Relic. Two more maps.
Nope.
Yep.
Coagulation?
Nope, we already did that one.
Did we really talk about Relic in detail? Because I love that map.
We talked about
it. Did we mention it in passing or
only
something?
Briefly, yeah.
I mean, if you guys want to talk about it, go for it.
I love Relic.
The cliff base that you could throw the flag off of, which was like a headlong
style
thing.
It was all about making sure the flag didn't get off that ledge.
Yep.
Once it was down, it was an all-out race to get that thing back over to the base, and it was hard to get that flag back up there once it was down.
Much harder than any other map that's similar. Much harder than Headlong, much harder than... there was another map that had a similar thing, but yeah, it was the hardest of any of them like that.
Yeah, once that flag's down, they had to start utilizing the teleporter to get from their own base over to, to kind of where the flag would sit, but... It was tough getting that thing back up there. I did it a couple times. If you had a good team, you could get it back up. It was just tough.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome when you do, though. You're like, yes!
You're like, yes! And then, we did it.
And then when you fall into the water, you die.
Yep.
Instantly.
There's it's no, like you jump off a cliff, kind of.
There's no shallow water in that map.
Yeah, you just sink right to the bottom.
The thing I love about Relic is you can get the flag down from the base in about 25 seconds once the match starts. If you take the Warthog, you can generally, if you just rush that Warthog up
the
into
Warthog
their base.
The Warthog rush.
Hog rush. You get it up there, jump out of your Warthog, just grab that flag and throw it off. And I mean,
that was a good tactic, and there was a defense for that that was basically like they would have at least one person, a lot of times two people, up on the base about halfway up, maybe a third of the way up towards the flag, yep. Real close to the flag. And as they were coming up, you're like, Warthog, here it comes. And you guys would both have grenades. So as soon as the Warthogs start coming, we just throw those grenades down.
Yep.
Yeah. And just blow that sucker up, or at least blow it off of the base. So,
yeah.
You know, we got to where, you know, you knew that was coming. So you were expecting the Warthog rush. And generally, like, as soon as the match starts, you were kind of going, okay, are they getting the Warthog? Are they coming around? What are they doing with it? You know, you're like, are they going to do this? You know? So, but that was a good technique, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, last one. Terminal.
Now, we did awesome. One of my favorite, there's two game types that were popular on Terminal. One of them was zombies, yep. Because you could get back up in the corner of the map, like, I don't know how to explain it, but it was kind of on a ledge back in the back corner. That you could like stand up and like keep shooting zombies, and it would take them forever to get these guys down from there, but eventually they could, you know. My favorite one on that map was train spotting, I think it was called, which was a King of the Hill shotguns, and the hill was right in the middle of where the trains kept flying across. So
that's pretty crazy.
There'd be guys shooting shotguns at each other, and all of a sudden, bam! Three guys go flying across. Yep. That was such a great game time. It was so much fun. Just when
killed
you think you're doing well, all of a sudden, splat!
Killed by the Guardians.
That's another, if you think about it, kind of a dynamic map feature that we were talking about earlier that don't show up in Halo 3 as much. The train. I mean, I remember when they announced the train, I was like, oh man, it's going to be so cool. Like, some guy's running at me, and just all of a sudden he just gets rammed by a train. It's going to be awesome.
And it was. It really lived up to the hype, you know? It was like, it was really great. It was way cool. Just when that was always a game changer when that happened, you know? Just when someone thinks they're going to make it across, and then bam!
It was always great when someone tried to get the Warthog across it, and then they get ran by the train. And the Warthogs are always the best things to get hit by the train.
Yeah, and there were modders that could fire trains out of their pistols and stuff like that.
Oh, that's pretty crazy.
And we missed one map though. Containment.
Oh,
no, we covered that.
Wait,
a little bit, I thought already. So that's why.
No, I don't think we talked about it. No, I don't remember talking about it.
Oh, I do. So that's why I didn't bring it up. But yes, containment. Go for it.
Now that one's kind of an L-shaped map, I think, and it had I had all kinds of cool stuff. I had the like raisable gates in front of each base, but then you could drive a vehicle over the gate if it's closed because it's at a 45-degree angle, but you couldn't get anything in if the gate's closed. But there was at least two other ways to get into the base. There was
the two
tunnels on either side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you could fly in a Banshee, or you could warp in as well, right?
You couldn't warp in.
No, you could only warp out.
There was a teleport out, but you could go up the ramps at the front of the base. The ramps that are on the right side of the base.
Oh yeah.
And you could jump in through those. So there were three ways you could get into the base if the gate wasn't open.
That's right. Yeah.
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 But of course, the gate enabled them to get in with a vehicle, and since there was a lot of open space there, they could get in while still taking out like a lot of any guys that were defending it, as long as they didn't have rockets. So that gate really it changed the dynamic a fair amount. Not nearly as much as some of the other ones, but it was enough to make it a pretty good difference if you got a Warthog in there and you got a good gunner. They could take out a lot of defenders, and they could get in and wreak some havoc. Of You've course, you know, good, there was always a guy defending against the Warthog Rush if in case they got in with the gate that had either rockets or had grenades or whatever he was doing. And he was, like, waiting in the back of the base just in case the Warthog got in.
Oops.
Or he would actually take their defending Warthog and he would just park it and just get in the gunner seat. And in case anyone got close to the flag, he would just take him out with that. I did that a lot.
And then there were the mines on the map, too. Little triangle mines.
The large fuel cells.
Fuel cells. Yeah, I remember that. Just exploding fuel cells that were pretty touchy.
Yeah.
I remember a lot of times, though, that was another one of those maps where if you got the flag and then got it out of the teleporter in the front, man, you were in for a fight to get that back because they teleported quite a ways out there. Yeah. So you had to either have some guys out there or you had to get some vehicles after those guys pronto and know which way they're going. So that was another one where it was like it got frantic as soon as they got the flag. But you were well defended if you could keep them from getting the flag. But once they got it and they get it through that teleport, you're in trouble.
And the issue is that the teleporter is so close to the flag spot. It's literally like... 10 feet. I mean, yeah, you're only like 3 seconds away from picking up the flag and then getting through the teleporter.
Exactly. And some people used to go and block that teleporter too. Like the defending team would intentionally go up to the top and block the teleporter. Of course, if you're up there, anybody can see you, and it's clear that you're blocking the teleporter.
Yeah.
But if you can somehow, you know, like if they're all rushing in and none of them are out there in the open, then you can do that preemptively and block them from teleporting. So they get the flag and they go up to the teleport and they're like, what the heck? They can't get out.
Right.
Yeah, but can't they really telefrag you?
They can telefrag you, but it gives your teammates enough time to potentially kill them while they're sitting in the teleporter. Telefrags aren't instant.
I know.
Or they would go in and teleport up there and then just go off to the side, and as soon as they come out, just take them
right,
out.
Right, just, yep, assassinate.
Yeah. Yep.
That was always fun.
Didn't you do another thing with the Banshee surfing?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You could go across the whole map. If you did it just right, it was real tricky, but you could stand on top of the Banshee with the flag and go across the entire map from one base to the other.
There's people that do that in Halo 3 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, you're wide open to sniping, but...
Oh, yeah.
Because you can't boost. Anyway, so I think that covers the maps.
I think it does. Ascension, Beaver Creek, Burial Mounds, Coagulation, Colossus, Foundation, Headlong, Ivory Tower, Lockout, Midship, Waterworks, Zanzibar, Backwash, Containment, Elongation, Gemini, Relic, Sanctuary, Terminal, Turf, Warlock, Desolation, and Tombstone.
Man, a lot of maps.
Yeah. And then
they were
Uplift and District for Halo 2 Vista. But, yeah.
Other than the Blastacular map, Pap, I don't think there is a single map in Halo 2 that I just completely despise.
Yeah.
I think that they're all pretty good.
Yeah.
And some of them are awesome.
Yeah.
Definitely.
A lot of them are awesome. As opposed to Halo 3, there are a lot of maps in Halo 3 that I cannot stand.
Yeah.
There are very few, you know, awesome maps in Halo 3.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's kind of our opinions on the maps, and we're already kind of into this a little bit, almost hitting 2 hours, so we will go ahead and start hitting into some of the tales that we got from submissions.
I'm not going to be able to stay for the submissions, guys, but it was cool going over the rest of the stuff, though, so.
Yeah, you will be with us for the Halo 2 final farewell, won't you?
Sure.
You need to be there with us.
Yes.
You see it out. Okay. Be there at the funeral. We need someone to give the eulogy.
I will see what I can do.
Yes.
And I get way too tongue-tied to give the eulogy. So.
Well, it's appropriate that Fumo does it because he started the podcast during Halo 2. So.
Halo 2 was a good game. Cut short.
Mowage.
His life was cut short.
Yep.
Oh. primal age of six, Halo 2 was killed. It will be remembered in the hearts of millions as the greatest multiplayer title on Xbox One.
I can't get that high much longer.
Alright, 15 BR salute.
Isn't it 21?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
21 gun salute.
I don't know where 15 came from, but close enough.
We'll just play some AC/DC
like
at the funeral.
21 gun salute for those about to rock. Fire!
Back when I was 14, I used to say that whenever I'd shoot a rocket. When I'd say, "For those about to rock! But I'd only say we salute you if I'd actually destroy a vehicle with it." I think I need to start doing that again.
Well, that's hilarious.
We salute you.
And it would be more awesome if you actually walked over to the guy and heard you over chat say, "We salute you." Oh.
For those about to...
And I went even further to the point where if I was with a team, if my team was like following right next to me, I'd just sing, "Oh, we're just a battery for hire with the guitar fire ready and waiting for you." I'd be running around, running around singing AC/DC, shooting people up. But this is back when I used to call Valhalla Van Halen. So I mean, go figure. I still call it Van Halen.
Thunderstruck.
I think I need to bring that back.
Oh, you do.
Man. I miss Halo 2.
We need to have, like, next week just be all about Halo 2.
Yeah.
So, I'll throw an event together and inform other communities alike, and we will try to put together a final Halo 2 goodbye.
Cool.
And I don't want to sound sentimental here.
Have fun with the rest, guys. Good talking with you.
All right. Well, I just wanted to say, Foo, before you leave, I don't want to get all sentimental and stuff, but back in Halo Tuesday, I was just a kid back then. I was an annoying little 14-year-old, and some of my best experiences with Halo 2 were playing in custom games and matchmaking with you and JVB and all those other great guys, and I just want to thank you for putting up with me as a kid and for being there for me when I was a youngin'.
Unlike Marty.
it sounds weird, and it sounds way more crazy than it probably should be, but Halo 2 days were some of the best social and, you know, crazy fun experiences I had when I was a kid, and I just wanted to thank you for that.
Well, glad you have fun. That's awesome. I did too, definitely. I met a lot of great people and had a lot of fun, definitely. It was really wild. You could get a party of 16 going, no problem, anytime. You know, try to do that with any game now.
I wish I was even around back then. I mean, I miss this whole Halo 2 vibe.
Oh, it was an experience, man. You had to be there. I mean, I keep saying that episode after episode that we talk about Halo 2, but you really did have to be there.
I'll tell you, one thing we didn't mention was clans. And that was a big
one. Oh, my God.
If you have 10 minutes, go for it.
All right. Quick rundown of clans.
You might not even get to submissions this time around.
I know, huh? You know, I'll tell you, I think I figured out, like, why they stopped doing clans. Because after Halo 2, there were very few games that implemented the clan system. And the way clans worked is basically you had a friends list, and you had an additional friends list, sort of, that was a clan. Now, you could start a clan, and you could invite people to your clan. And basically, you have...
Uh-oh.
Did we lose him?
I don't know. Fumo!
Foo, no!
No!
Maybe he literally meant it. Maybe he knew that his internet would end in like 3 seconds. I gotta go, guys. My internet's going.
We'll try to get him back in here. Hang on.
I do.
Hang on, people. We will resurrect
him. I'm sorry. Sorry, everybody. This is awesome podcasting.
Ghost Skype quality. Anyway, any filler that you can...
Like I think what Foo was getting at was, essentially, yeah, with clans, you have two friends lists, and Xbox Live didn't want you to have two friends lists.
Yeah.
And I still refute this point, because it's not like I have two friends lists. There's a difference between a clan and a friends list. I can't choose who's in my clan unless I'm an overlord.
Right. But then if you're in a clan, you can't have another clan. So there was a limit to it.
Yeah, you were stuck with your own one clan, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that might be the last thing we heard from Fu this episode, maybe.
Aw, he didn't even have to say goodbye.
I know.
Wait, there he is.
Oh, there he is.
Got dropped in the middle of a sentence there. That was weird. Huh. So I guess I'll pick up where I left off, huh?
Go for it.
Yep.
Okay, cool. So, so you had the three levels of kind of membership of the clan. A clan could be up to 100 people. So, oh my gosh, we went through... Here's the short answer on why there are no more clans in games. There is tons of drama in clans.
Drama.
It was full. There was always some kind of drama going on, and basically, like, you know, because of the 100 person limit, we ran out of space in our clan. So then we started another clan, and then another clan, and then we started going, okay, now we got to figure out a system going on this, because we're like at three clans now, and we don't have room, so we're gonna have to add another clan. So and then we made like six clans preemptively, like more than we needed. So we reserved all the names and everything, right? So some people were in clans by themselves just because we didn't have enough people to fill theirs up yet. And then we kind of said, well, let's try something different. Instead of having these huge clans, because like we would have clan versus clan battles and stuff, and then some clans would just have a bunch of people quit for some reason. They would kind of go inactive. The clan leader that we kind of assigned to that clan would quit playing the game or whatever. So, you know, then it was like, well, maybe if we had smaller clans, then, you know, people could work together more often and stuff like that, and it could be more of a tight-knit team kind of thing. And that didn't work either, because then you had these smaller clans, and then you had if the overlord kind of quit, then the clan was pretty much trashed. So there would be people that would be a part of this clan that nobody would play at all. So they're like, this system sucks too, you know, and everybody was just like, this system sucks, that system sucks. So nothing never quite worked. And at a couple of different points, we had these kind of insurrections in the clans where we would have somebody somebody in the clan would kind of break the rules, because there's no like clan leader of clan leaders. Like I can't say, right. Well, I can. This person in Podtacular 2, for instance, can't invite anyone or anything like that. So people like that were already clan leaders in these secondary clans would go in and make their friends officers, and they would be like, oh, we're not going to do anything, don't worry about it. Or they would make them overlords, because you could have multiple overlords.
Well, that's smart.
Yeah, and just no. Be like, oh, man, it'll be fun, you know, you can make us overlord or something. And then they go in and like, ho-ho-ho, and they go in their account, and they would go and delete everybody in the clan. And they wouldn't give it back to their friend. And the person would be like, my friend's being stupid. They're not giving me back to the clan. It's like, well, why did you give it to him in the first place? You know? We're trying to keep control of the system, and it's not working here. So there was always something. It was so much drama. It was just – really, I mean, it was stressful. And why, you know, why is a video game like community got to be like stressful like that? And it was only because of the power systems that were involved in the whole thing. And there was always someone going, make me a clan officer and things like that. And it's like, no, because there's reason we don't just make everyone clan officers if they ask, because we've been burned on that before. People deleting members and all that stuff. So, man, I'll tell you, you know, but there was the cool thing about it, though, is that there was like kind of a clan identity, you know. You were part of this clan, and there was actually a clan ranking at one point. You could go into clan matches, like early on in the Halo 2 setup, and you could play against other clans. Of course, it was a little funky, because your clan could have up to 100 members, and the clan matches were what, 4-on-4 or 5-on-5 at most.
Yeah.
So you could just cherry pick your best players. And anybody could change clans anytime they want to. So the whole system was a bit flawed as far as the competitive nature of it. But it was still kind of an identity, and it was kind of a cool thing to ally yourself with different groups and stuff like that. So I guess what the progression of that in modern day games is the clan tag, like in Modern Warfare 2. You just have a couple of characters that you can put next to your name and identify with a certain group without having any of the drama of of, you know, officers deleting members and people inviting their friends, making them overlords and deleting everybody. And then all of a sudden everybody's mad at everybody. Now you got to make a new clan that has a slightly different name because that clan name's taken now because they're kind of squatting on that clan. So it was just all kinds of craziness around that. But it was interesting though. It was kind of cool to bring everybody together under the same banner anyway.
Yeah. I remember, well, I've been going through some of the old posts fixing them from WordPress. And I've seen a couple of the things that you were talking about where people abuse the clan stuff. But, I mean, back when you guys were doing it, you guys had Rec A through Rec F.
Oh, yeah, we had the Rec clans and the Pro clans.
And the yep. season and the season tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of podcasts I listened to back, because like episode 30s and 40s, where you and Spellcheck would talk it up on clans.
Yep, that was kind of a cool system. I thought that you know, when it was working pretty well. When everybody's clan was firing, you know, it was working well. Like we would basically just pit clans against each other in a big ladder, and you know, and see who ended up on top. I think the thing that happened is after the first season tournament, you know, the clans that didn't win were just kind of like dejected and ended up not being as active as the clan that did win.
Right.
So it kind of ruined the whole system just having one season tournament. But it was a really cool concept anyway. We had the rec clans and we had like specific requirements that, especially in
level
the pro 15, clans.
Level 15.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I remember it.
Yeah, there was the rec clans and there was the pro clans. Was it the rec clans you had to be 15? Yeah. No, the rec clans were wide open, weren't they?
Not from what I remember from you saying in the podcast.
Okay, well, maybe not. Okay, yeah, I guess the rec clans you had to be 15, but then the pros you had to be a higher level or something, or yeah.
You had to. Yeah. They actually had tryouts for the pro clans.
Well, that's right.
To go to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we had like the all-stars.
Yeah.
And that was the competitive the competitive group that played against other communities.
And you guys were undefeated for a while, for a good while.
Yeah, the All-Stars were, yeah. Yeah, yeah, they kicked butt, man.
They were pretty cool. Pretty awesome back in the day.
Yeah, I also remember when the catchphrase was, to help you level up and stay there instead of keep on fragging trucks.
Oh, yeah, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, that was early on, yeah. It was, you know, we tried to make the whole thing about helping people out, you know, and, like, having always something you could take away from it. But it didn't always work out that way, though, because we had stuff like that was like shows that were all just about joking around and stuff. And
yeah,
but
that's all the shows are these days.
Yep. Welcome to the new Podtacular.com.
Well, it's, you know, Halo 3 is not very competitive. Well, it is to some extent, but the majority of people play Halo 3. I don't think play it competitively right now. So
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I wouldn't know. I don't play it very often.
Shun the
neither do we, so you're in the same boat as us. We've been playing Halo 2 recently, more than we have been playing Halo 3, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, going back to the clan thing, it's similar to the drama that you see in like World of Warcraft guilds. Like it's great when it works, and when it's working, it's awesome, you know. But guild drama just completely messes up the whole thing. And you see, there have been tales of these massive progression guilds in World of Warcraft that get world first like boss kills in these raid groups, and they just completely get destroyed from the top down. Like an overlord or whoever guild leader, you know, gets mad and destroys. He's just gonna, you know, decides to disband the entire guild. So I mean,
yeah.
Well, you know, I think what happened is I'll bet you Bungie got accosted by all these people going, they took over our clan. Can you do something about it? And they were just like, we don't want to get involved in these stupid clan politics. I mean, come on.
It's not worth it.
Wasn't the official reasoning because it was against Xbox Live terms of service?
That's bull. You know why?
Because I think it's the unofficial reason.
Because, look, Ghost Recon or Gra 2 had clans to the same extent, if not more so, than Halo 2 did. So yeah. That's bull.
Hmm.
I don't buy that for a minute. That's there's similar excuses I've heard for different like
When I first saw active roster though in the new multiplayer trailer, I was thinking clan support, but then they came out and kind of declined that, so
debunked it.
It made me sad.
I think Bungie realizes that Clansport may be more trouble than it's worth in the end.
It might be, and maybe they just see that and we.
It's
don't.
A cool idea, but it's not worth implementing. You know, I mean.
Right.
I mean, they might know more than we do about that. So.
Yeah. If there was some kind of way to have like, well, yeah, I guess if there was some kind of way to have one overlord, but even if there was, you know, what if that person like got all crazy all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah, man.
I'm saying, like the overlord of overlords, but then if you know, what if they went, I don't know, just went whacked out and decided to delete every clan or whatever. So.
I remember you guys used that little jingle in there for the.
Oh yeah, for the season tournament.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's a really cool system when it's working right, but when it's not, it's no fun for anybody.
Yeah,
I was proud of that whole setup we had though with the rec clans, which were the recreational clans, so that you would just play customs and just goof around and not be competitive or anything. Because clans were like to the point where if you entered a competitive clan, you had to play competitively regularly, because otherwise you would bring down the clan's level. So and you didn't want to do that. So
yeah.
So the competitive clans wanted to be competitive. And then other players would just want to be like, hey, we just want to mess around. So there was this kind of split within the clans where before we decided that, and they were like, you know, these guys are bringing us down. They're just messing around. And they're like, yeah, but that's kind of the whole point of clans.
That's what they want to do.
Yeah, so that's why we split into the pro and rec clans. And the ones that could be competitive or that wanted to could just do that, and then the rec clans could just play customs and all that. So. It was like an extra friends list, but it was a decentralized one, or it was rather a centralized one, as opposed to a only your friends list and only their friends list kind of thing. It was just a group friends list kind of thing, so it was kind of cool for that.
It was pretty awesome.
Anywho. Ugh. Okay, well, I better get to bed so I can...
Okay, well, thanks.
All right.
For...
Thank you.
Coming and sharing your thoughts and words of wisdom from the man who started it all. So.
All right, guys. We'll keep on frogging trucks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right on.
Okay.
Right, good night.
Yeah, Fumo. But yeah. So moving on to submissions that we have. First off, thanks to Brent for proofing all of these. He's decided to volunteer and go ahead and proof all of these. We're going to try to make the podcast a little more professional in the fact that we go through and check all of these submissions for grammar and spelling. I'm sure you have a little bit to say about that, Brent.
yeah, some of the grammatical errors, I didn't want to change the submission because if I fix some of the grammatical errors, I would just have to completely rewrite some of these sentences. So there are still going to be some grammatical errors, but I've tried to fix most of the spelling, so you won't be hearing us making fun of, you know, spelling errors as much, because that's kind of boring. We want to focus more on the actual submission than the spelling of the submission. So.
Yeah, but there may be an occasional one that we just all out pick on because it's horrible. Maybe. We'll see.
No, not if I have anything to do about it. Okay. If I do, it's because I missed it in copy edit. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right.
So I'll let you take the first one since you have a copy of it in there that you'll probably address.
All right. The dog patch says, "Hey, Podtac, the dog patch here with a tail from the foxhole. I remember this one sniping spot on Headlong in Halo 2 where no one could see you. The only way to get down was to, one, commit suicide, or two, have a banshee next to you all the time. Sad to see the servers being cut, but at least Chile still has them, right? I don't understand that." I talked to Dustin about this earlier. We still don't understand
what
that means. Yeah,
we don't know what you're talking about.
So we don't know what Chile has to do with servers being cut. But moving on, thanks for reading and or listening. Whoever said to stay on topic is a straight-up idiot. I frag him. Keep fragging noobs who drive mongooses in Rat's Nest while playing Team SWAT. Shout out to my boy Danielson, Jeremy, Brent Gamer, Duststorm, and G. Lewis. Love your podcast, and I always tune in. The Dog Patch is signing out. P.S. Sorry about posting in the comments section.
And we're still not sure what that means either.
I guess he posted in the comments section something that he shouldn't have, maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I'm confused.
I am.
Next one we have is from Rogue Assassin, with the A's being replaced by 4s.
Yep.
He writes in, I would like to start out by saying I am very disappointed that Halo 2's amazing multiplayer experience is going away. I remember the best game of Halo 2 I ever played was on Midship, the best Halo map ever created or recreated. Anyways, I was playing a local multiplayer match at my cousin's house with two of my friends. We made the game type all swords and had the best time ever. We played for 4 hours straight and had a blast. Then we played the best level in Halo 2 campaign, Metropolis. Man, this level has everything. Tank owning, Scarab destruction, and most importantly, lots of Master Chief kicking more Covey butt, baby. Anyway, Halo 2 will always live on in my heart, and I will never forget this amazing addition to the Halo universe's multiplayer and campaign. Okay, well, thanks for reading my submission, and I would like to give shoutouts to Stall Me Please, Dusty, G. Lewis, Brent Gamer, and whoever said, "Stop running from our wiener schnitzel." When was that?
I don't. At the beginning of the Decades of Games podcast, apparently.
Who was that though? Who said wiener?
Chucky, maybe.
Who said wiener schnitzel?
I remember saying something about wiener schnitzel, but I don't think I said that. I think Chucky was responding to my joke.
Okay.
And he said, "Stop running from our wiener schnitzel."
Okay. Keep on fragging noobs on Battlefield Bad Company 2 that don't know how to defend and rush to the other side like idiots. Also, keep on fragging France because French people suck? Okay.
Yeah, they do. Rogue out.
Rogue out. P.S. Any good ideas of what I should change my gamer tag to? If you have one, PM me on Xbox Live. My name is J. Dweeb. 9501 or Web B Star.
All right, moving on to Funds 14. Hey guys, just making a submission on Halo 2's campaign, which I didn't like that much. Luckily, my friend and I finished it on Legendary One Light. Then, just last week, when I was searching for my Halo 2 disc, I found it and beat it again. Like, anyway, later, guys.
Okay. I guess that was more appropriate for last week.
Yep.
Should have sent it in for last week. Anyways, Headshot 5991 writes in, "Hey guys, this is the best Halo 2 multiplayer story I have." Minus the burp. Excuse me. "I was playing Slayer on Zanzibar. I got on the Warthog and started to run it across the map when I was hit by a rocket. The next thing I knew, I got an overkill because part of the Warthog..." Wait, overkill's in Halo 3. There's no overkill in Halo 2.
I think overkill is
a kill tag. No.
Oh yeah, kill tag. You're right. You're right.
So yeah.
I don't remember.
So I guess it's he got a kill tag. Because part of a warthog flew across the map and killed 4 futuristic sex robots. Okay. Anyways, keep on fragging trucks. I hope you get this to episode 500. We plan to do so. Hopefully. Depending on what content there is. We'll see.
Alright, moving on to Monkey. "Back in the day, when Halo 2 was one of the most amazing games ever, I got invited into a clan called Monkey's World. It was the funniest, most unbelievable clan ever. Only people with the word monkey in their gamer tag could join. At that time, my name was Monkey, and I was invited into it. The clan had about 40 or 50 people in it. We weren't
wow.
a black...
wow!
40 or 50 monkeys. we weren't a bad clan, either. We had won a lot of games. It was later broken up, but it was pretty cool. I don't know why, but when I think of Monkey's Halo 3, that was the first thing that comes to mind. Well, keep correcting grammar and reading long Halo summaries." Cool. I couldn't correct that dude's grammar. I tried.
Okay, Tyler the T3 writes in, "While I don't have anything specific to submit today, I have many things that I want to mention about the epic multiplayer battles in Halo 2. Headlong is easily the best map in this game." I think Brent would agree.
Oh, yeah.
"And I remember many moments in the Warthog, Ghost, and Banshee. I also play Tower of Power on Ascension and Zombies on Foundation. Also two very good customs. My bird is talking. Anyways, I remember the consistent fear of zombies hunting you down in every match. Although Xbox Live for the original Xbox will soon be terminated, its memories will still live on, and Halo 2 for Windows Vista will still be available. Shoutouts to Duststorm, Chucky J, Brent Gamer, and G. Lewis keeps on fragging trucks in turf.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Pokemon Master Indy says, "Dear fellow Podtachians, I'm submitting this while on my cell phone and on the Halo 2 multiplayer screen. I never played much Halo 2 multiplayer until I got a 360 because I lived in the middle of nowhere. My tale is that while I was playing multiplayer, I found out that I had an unusually skilled when it came to using the sniper. I think it's because my name's Greg. I also have an uncanny ability to stick people with plasma nades and get double kills with both types of nades. I don't have anything else to say, so I shall head off. Keep on fragging noobs that think that Heart Gold and Soul Silver, which I have, are dumb." Well, I certainly don't think that Heart Gold and Soul Silver. I'm with you, buddy.
Wow, we got back to Pokemon again.
I know.
We went about an hour and a half without any Pokemon references, and then Pokemon Master Indy had to come in here and
mess it up.
Yeah. Dang it.
Just when you think you're out, they pull you back in.
I wanna be the very best. Okay, last one we have here is from Wakashi. He writes in, "What's up, Podtech? I had an awesome spring break because this year I wasn't dragged into another ridiculous 1 billion miles long road trip with my mother and soon-to-be out-of-the-house older sister." Okay. Sounds like weird family matters. Anyways, I would like to say that part of episode 220 was the funniest podcast episode that I have heard in a while. It literally made one of my ribs hurt. Okay, I hope we don't inflict any more physical harm to anyone, but we'll try to keep the humor part of it down notch, I guess, if we can.
We're gonna turn down the humor we don't hurt people's ribs.
I don't know. You tell me. How does that translate? How does audio?
That seems like it's a self-inflicted injury. That's not our fault. It's not our fault that he found it so funny that his ribs hurt.
Okay.
Because to be fair, we're not that funny. So I mean, there's something wrong with this guy.
Or maybe we are, and we just don't think we are. I don't know. Anyways. I was listening to it around 2 a.m. and I tried my headset not. I tried my hardest not to wake up anyone from my inevitable laugh-tacular frenzy. Troubled party. Oh, that's why. It was the troubled party submission. That would explain it. Remember that one, Brent?
I don't remember it.
The long one that you read?
Oh, man. That. Yeah, the long one with when Keith was here?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that. I do remember it now.
That's the one he was laughing towards.
Oh, yeah.
That makes sense. Huh. Okay. Fun to say, Trouble Party submission that killed me so badly that I had to listen to the part twice. I will always remember the part when he said, "But then Grandpa of Regret knew Master Chief was coming and space jumped, which is like teleporting except everything dies around you." Unquote. That made me raffle big time. Anyway, here's my tale from the Halo 2 glory days. When Halo 2 was still the king of Xbox Live, I had to settle for the ghetto version of Xbox Live, which was known to many as System Link and or LAN. On my 16th birthday, I had a final epic LAN party in my garage. One of my friends was able to bring his projector. I had also set up two 32-inch TVs plus an extra 28-inch TV for anyone who'd rather play campaign, but no one played on the 22-inch TV. I had also set up a couple of air manipulation devices known as fans in order to prevent the overload perspiration of everyone's tension and or focus from short-circuiting any of the wires or Xboxes and or TVs. Man, this guy's dedicated. There were also 12 players total at the LAN party. It lasted for about 6 hours, but I was only able to be in part of it for about an hour and a half, because it was too busy cycling around the neighborhood and search for more controllers and extension cables. But what I remember the most from the party was the epic three teams of four Tower of Power on Ascension. And 6v6 Team Slayer on Lockout with 99 lives for each player was very epic. I practically lost my voice from yelling and calling out that day. Well, that's my story. I'll be playing Halo 2 online until it takes a much deserved rest. So if anyone wants to party up, just message me on Xbox Live. Hope to see you guys during the beta.
Yep, you'll see us.
Yep.
Maybe. We'll definitely be playing.
Yeah, we'll definitely be on playing some Halo 2.
Checking out that jetpack. Jetpack and Halo Reach. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Are you ready for Reach, Dustin?
I think it's going to be pretty good. I'm still, at least from what they've shown in the videos that we've seen, I'm still unsure about their choices of leveling out, especially like for loadouts, since it seems like the elites only have the one. So, but other than that, I'm pretty confident that Reach is going to be pretty good.
I think what you're going to see happen is the Spartan versus Elite thing is going to fade out very, very quickly, and they're going to switch it to just Spartan versus Spartan. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I can agree, I think.
Because it just seems more fun. It's like, oh, okay, the Elites have you know, faster shield regeneration, and they're bigger, and they run faster. Oh, big whoop. I would rather have loadouts.
Yeah, me too.
It just makes for better gameplay. And it's even, you know, more sweet when you think, you know, both teams have loadouts.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like if you give the Elites a certain set of loadouts and then give the Spartans a certain set of loadouts and balance it out. Like, give, Elites are known for cloaking, right? So give them the cloak. And then give the Spartans the shield overcharge and the jump packs. And then give the Elites the cloaking and the jump dodge or whatever. Right? I mean, something to that effect.
I don't know. We'll see what goes down in the beta. It might be sweet. I don't know.
And then it is the beta.
I haven't played the game. You got to realize, talking about Halo and playing Halo are two completely different things. If you had never played Halo in your life and you just someone explained it to you, you would have no clue what playing Halo was like. It is something that you have to physically do to understand.
Yeah, that's true.
And, I mean, they're just talking about Halo Reach at this point. And we've seen some video, but we haven't played it yet.
Correct.
So I'm going to wait till the beta to, you know, lay down some judgment on what I think of the new game mechanics.
I think that's appropriate. Yeah.
I just want them to bring back Waterworks and Headlong. And they won't.
And Terminal. And Turf. And all the maps.
No, not so much. Because, I mean, they're not known for remaking a whole bunch of maps when they come out with a new game. They only remake, like, two or three, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, at most. So if maps are getting remade, I want to see Headlong with jetpacks. I want to see Waterworks with jetpacks.
I want to see a good coagulation map that doesn't
with jetpacks.
Doesn't suck like Valhalla did.
No, like a real remake of coagulation.
Yeah, I mean the conversion from Blood Gulch to coagulation wasn't like exactly the same, but it was
very similar. There were very minor additions in coagulation.
Yeah, like the different levels of the bases, like the basement.
But Valhalla is almost nothing like Coagulation or Blood Gulch.
No, and it was supposed to be pretty much like the replacement for it, which kind of was a poor excuse for one, regardless. So.
Here's hoping. I don't know if they're going to remake any maps from any of the Halo games in the Halo Reach.
I have a feeling they will, especially.
But I mean, with the addition of like the jetpacks, that completely changes the way that you move around the map.
Yeah, but I bet there's still a few maps that can still utilize the jetpacks, probably even more effectively than currently, or Bungie will.
But I can think of a situation on Headlong where if you throw like a jetpack on there, all you got to do is hit the jetpack and fly up to the third story of the defensive building and just run in, grab the flag.
Yeah, that would kind of really turn that map into a sucky map, though, if you think about
That's what I'm saying. I can't think of any maps that would work with the jetpack.
I mean, Last Resort.
You would jump over the seawall. I'm not joking. Like, you start that map, you just hit your jetpack, you go over the seawall.
But you can still get over the seawall. Maybe it takes 2 seconds longer, but you can still get over that seawall even without a jetpack.
Yeah, but the jetpack is very fast. That's what I'm saying. There's a difference between walking up a flight of stairs and then actively jumping through it.
There's a lot of dynamic to it, and I mean, with jetpacks too, you're open to fire from just about anywhere as well. So
but you can fire too. It's not like you don't have any defensive mechanism. If I'm jumping up in my jetpack and I see someone below me, like, I'm gonna shoot him in the head.
But it's the same thing for man cannons too.
And I don't get that many kills off of people on the man cannon. 99% of the time that somebody goes off of a man cannon, they don't get killed midair. They make it.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have you been slaughtered off the man cannon?
Oh, I've been killed quite a few times, actually.
Exactly, but how many times have you jumped and made it? In relation to the number of times that you've jumped and got killed in midair?
Probably about 90% of the time.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I don't know, that is kind of an interesting development to think about. Yeah, because come to think about it, that really does change the dynamic of the game completely, is having those loadouts. I know, I think there's a lot of potential for Bungie to do really great things with Reach, but there's also a lot more ways for them to mess it up.
Didn't they say that the grenade launcher has an EMP effect now?
Yeah, they did. I'm still... Like it's
that's awesome. I love that idea. That's awesome.
It's a secondary fire for it where you can like shoot a grenade and plant it and then detonate it as an EMP bomb.
Well, the way I read it was you shoot it and then you hold down the trigger and whenever you let go of the trigger it detonates. But it has the secondary EMP effect. It's not like a secondary fire.
Huh. Okay.
So the grenade doesn't detonate until you let go of the trigger.
Unless you just shoot it regularly and then it detonates on impact.
And well, it bounces. Unless it goes a certain distance.
Huh, yeah. But, so, wait, if it bounces, it's almost like a brute shot then.
Well, it...
Oh, no.
It doesn't bounce the same way as a brute shot. It bounces in the way that a regular grenade launcher actually works in real life. If you've seen like a grenade launcher on the end of an M16 where it basically just pumps out the canister and then the canister hits the ground and then detonates after a certain point. Or if the timer on the grenade goes long enough, it can detonate in midair.
Yeah.
But the way I understand it is you fire off the canister and you can detonate it in midair, apparently, according to what Bungie says, but it can also, like, bounce on the ground, or if it hits an enemy, it will also detonate immediately. If it hits an enemy head-on.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's weird. That's one of those things that I've got to play to understand.
Well, we'll get that in the month.
Yep. But it's fun to speculate.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Well, that's all the submissions that we have for this week. So... We're going to go ahead and wrap things up since we've had another long, long episode. Oh, jeez. It's going to be nice not having the Halo 2 stuff anymore, because then we'll be back to hour and a half, hour shows. I'm trying to get that time down. So, send in your comments, questions, and submissions to submissions@podtacular.com. Our show is community-centered based on your submissions, so be sure to submit. Watch podtacular.com for an invitation to submit your stuff for next week's show.
Be sure to check out our website, podtacular.com, and while you're there, come drop us a line in the forums and get involved with the community.
Thanks to everyone that contributes to Podtacular by dedicating time to lead events, helping out with the bills, by donating through PayPal, following us on Twitter and Facebook, or subscribing to the show on iTunes and Zune Marketplace.
Check out the other great shows on the GamerCast network, including Gamertag Radio, Uncle Gamer, Sarcastic Gamer, the GCN Video Game Show, Post Game Report, and Destructoid.
Sweet. Next week, we'll be having BS Angel on over from Hadi McBluggy, I believe.
We will.
That is what Greg has told me, so hopefully that is still the case.
Yep.
And we will be doing our final Halo 2 show, since that is the week Halo 2 service will be shut down.
The death of Halo 2.
Yes, so
this is it.
Yeah, it'll be the death of Halo 2 show, our third show of this three-part show, and we're basically going to wrap up anything we really didn't cover in these two shows, which is probably not that much, but we will be taking call-ins. We're hoping to make it live. Still gotta get the kinks worked out, but I actually have time to work out the kinks, so make sure that's working by the time the recording comes around. We'll make the announcement for that on the homepage as soon as that comes out. So, and hopefully Greg will be back.
Hopefully. I mean, if he invited BS Angel, you'd kind of expect him to be on the podcast that she's on.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. But yes. So
I forgot about this.
Forgot about what?
Warthog chain gun will overheat in Halo Reach.
Really?
Yep. Says the Warthog's chain gun will now overheat after prolonged use, and the Scorpion once again features a secondary machine gun turret.
Huh. Okay.
That's kind of weird. I don't know if I like that.
That seems really weird for Halo, because everyone's used to the Warthog just spraying.
Yeah, it's a bullet shower.
Yeah.
You're able to shoot it indefinitely.
See, okay. Here's another example of the whole balancing issue.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You're going to sacrifice balance for fun? I mean, seriously, Bungie. I mean, I guess it really doesn't matter at this point, because Bungie knows everyone's going to buy it anyways.
It doesn't matter.
But it's just it's really disappointing when companies like Bungie and other things sacrifice fun and uniqueness for balance and fairness.
Yeah, that's an issue I have. That's a lot of the reason why I don't like MLG. I mean, gameplay-wise, I'll watch it, but it's not my favorite. I don't like the mentality of MLG. That's the reason I don't play Super Smash Bros. Anymore. Because the way that most people play it nowadays, the tournament style of play, that's no fun. That's not the reason I enjoy Smash Bros.
Yeah, you like Smash Bros.
They want to play it with, like, zero items on, and everybody has to play with, like, Fox or Pikachu or something. I like playing, you know, Super Smash Bros. Because I get to play as my favorite Nintendo characters, beating each other up using their own special moves. And I enjoy those messed up items, you know?
Yeah, you have random items that completely alter the game and just make it that much more fun. And sure, you might, like, really not like something, but to that effect, it's contributing to the whole fun factor.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it might suck, but you're still having a good time. It's like, oh, I just died 5 times in a row from Pokemon. Crap! This is still really awesome, though. I mean, it's like for Halo 2 for some of the asymmetrical maps. Yeah, one team might be completely dominating another, but then you have those rare instances where something just amazing happens and everyone is just in shock and awe because of what just happened.
Well, I don't even understand that, because I never really felt in Halo 2 that there was a map where one team had an advantage over the other, just as far as map design went. Or, each side had its own advantages and disadvantages, you know? But the thing is, what they're trying to balance it out is where no team has an advantage or disadvantage. It's just all equal all the time. And I don't like that. I like to have places that have advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah, that's boring, though.
It's boring. That's what I'm saying. It's like the advantage of the defending tower in Headlong is the fact that it's so high up, and it takes a while to get up there. Like, you have to climb something to get to the flag, no matter which way you're taking.
Yeah.
But the attackers, on the other hand, have an advantage, because once they do get up there, once the flag's down, it's an all-out race to either return the flag or get it back to your base.
Yeah, it's almost a cakewalk in some instances to get the flag out once you get it down on the ground.
Yeah, but that's half the problem, is it's tough to get it down to the ground sometimes if the defending team knows what they're doing.
But see, it's that sudden instance of just all-out slaughter that makes the game so much more fun. So.
The one thing that I do like about this grenade launcher, and I'm reading the Bungie Weekly update right now, is I was right about the EMP blast. It says the EMP blast will damage and deactivate the type of stuff you would expect it to.
Okay.
So, vehicles, what I'm thinking is I fire a grenade up into the air next to a Banshee and then detonate that thing, and the Banshee falls out of the air if it doesn't get destroyed. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Because right now the only way to take a Banshee out of the air is to get like a really lucky toss with the overload.
Or the plasma grenade, because I've
stuck. Yeah, the plasma pistol. But...
Well, not even the plasma pistol. Sometimes plasma grenades will do it, too.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, not destroy the Banshee. I'm saying make it fall out of the air.
Oh, okay.
Just deactivate it.
Yeah.
So,
Okay. Well, we've rambled enough for you guys tonight, so we'll call it quits for the podcast. Remember...
So how about those Pokemans?
Oh, really?
I'm just saying, I've caught a whole bunch of them, like 150 cents.
Yeah. Have you been playing while we've been recording?
Actually, no. Okay. I was having a pretty good time waxing nostalgic with these Primo guys.
Okay. Well, we'll see you guys next time. Thanks for tuning in.
See you, everybody. Keep playing Pokemon.
This week on the GamerCast Network. Gamertag Radio episode 232 features an exclusive interview with Shockwave, the founder of Team Xbox. Podtoid will be about Cave Story, probably, and how people who have finished the hell level are cooler than people who haven't. Who's that Pokemon? Find out on Podtacular. Discover the community that brings you all these great podcasts and more at GamerCastNetwork.com.